Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's see, Representative Juergens, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from our last meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from the March 14th meeting.
Thank you. Representative Juergens has moved that we adopt the minutes. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the minutes are adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Juergens. All right, we've got a very full agenda, and members, we do have the basement hearing room reserved for tonight, just in case we don't finish up, which I think is a likely possibility, but we'll see how things go. So my intention, and again, I've got a lot of members running back and forth presenting bills, is to try to get the members up who do not serve on this committee first, and then turn to committee members. We'll try to do that, but we may have to adjust that plan as the committee goes along. So we'll start with Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dadney.
As Representative Zerwas is coming forward, I do have a concern for testifiers who've come more than 50 miles is the usual measure here. So as you adapt through the hearing, if I would ask that you consider that.
Thank you. Yes, that is a good point, Representative Dabney. And so if any members presenting here know that you've got testifiers from more than 50 miles, you do, all right? I presume so in looking at the list. But
I do know of at least one other on one of your bills that I believe is more than 50 miles.
All right, so we will do our best, but I can't make any guarantees, but we'll do our very best. All right. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to get my file out with your bill, so I will go ahead and move House File 2104, the laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And welcome to the committee, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Madam Chair, I want to thank you for hearing the bill. I know it was submitted late. Elk River's switching over leadership with our new school superintendent, and so while we're excited about that, we're a little late in getting this bill in. Madam Chair, members, this bill deals with compensatory aid for the top 20 districts and making sure that those that compensatory aid is in line with the average. And I have two testifiers here from the Elk River School District that can talk a little bit about the challenges that we face as a district on the outskirts of the suburbs.
All right. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. And if your testifiers want to come forward, welcome. And to each of you, if you would just state your name before you provide your remarks so we have that for the record.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair and Education Finance Committee members. My name is Corey Franson. I'm the Director of Community Engagement, Community Ed for Independent School District ISD 728. Our district spans the Rogers area, Otsego, Zimmerman, and Elk River areas in the northwestern portion of our metro area. I appreciate the opportunity to come here today and appreciate Representative Zerwas putting this bill forward for us. ISD 728 is experiencing a widening achievement gap for our struggling learners. Due to the limited compensatory funds that we receive, we focus the majority of our dollars on 3 out of 25 buildings in our district. This means remaining schools in our district have limited resources for those compensatory funds. And though the funds are definitely supporting our struggling learners who have the highest of needs, unfortunately the limited funds fail to address the needs of many of our students who could benefit from individual intervention strategies. Our district utilizes research-based curriculum and intervention strategies to provide individualized differentiated learning using the MTSS, or multi-tier systems of support model. Our interventions are showing positive results, but we can only serve a fraction of the students that truly need our help in our district. Access to these compensatory funds would mean that we would expand our intervention strategies to serve more of our struggling learners by adding in-classroom interventions to keep students in the classroom and reduce the need to remove students for those intervention strategies. expand our best practice data-proven intervention strategies to all of our schools and provide additional resources and training to support those interventions. And we would serve twice the number of our struggling learners to help close the largest achievement gap that we have within our district population. I'll now certainly turn over to Greg Hine, our Executive Director of Business Services.
Thank you, Chair Lynn, and members of the committee. I've been over 20 years in education, finance, multiple school districts across the state, and including 6 years at the Department of Education in the finance area, so I feel I'm pretty well-versed in funding formulas and things. The economic disparity that this is causing to districts like ours, I would sort of consider Elk River to be a poster child of the issue at stake here, amongst other educational equity funding issues that you all have to deal with, and I know how difficult that is. But for example, Elk River has a total enrollment of about 13,000 students, and we have almost 2,000 that qualify for free and reduced lunch. The fact that those 2,000 students are spread out amongst all of our different schools in the district and the way that the current funding formula works puts us on a very low end of the amount of compensatory revenue that we generate. Yet those at-risk learners still have those needs. A good example is the Rogers Elementary School. They have 64 students that qualify for the free and reduced lunch, and they generate a grand total of $13,000 of compensatory revenue. Obviously, that isn't enough or sufficient resource to hire and staff in any meaningful way to move the needle and address the needs of those students. We all know that education is a key component to breaking the economic disparity cycle, so the funding formulas should and need to reflect that to provide the and not put these students at a disadvantage educationally. Excuse me. In further compounding that cycle. So that's pretty much what our situation is.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Did you have any other testifiers, Representative West?
Madam Chair, in interest of the committee's time, we kept it to these two testifiers.
Thank you. We appreciate that. All right. Any questions from committee members? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Can you just let me know what property tax amount you levy?
What was the question?
The property taxes at the local level.
Mr. Hine, do you know, so I think what Representative Thiessen is asking, do you have a levy? Are you asking about an operating levy, Representative Thiessen? Do you have an operating levy in Elk
River? Yes, we do, and it's we've set it to, we just approved it a couple of years ago to raise it from roughly $350 up to the maximum amount that qualifies for equalization, which is $760, is where we're at now.
Okay, thank you.
We have kind of extraordinary issues with our growth and construction, that we have a lot of debt levy, so it kind of hampers our ability to go much farther than that, and we would be into the unequalized territory, so that would all be 100% levy beyond the 760.
Thank you, Mr. Hayne.
Madam Chair, that's one of the challenges that my community faces kind of on the outskirts is being in Sherburne County, one of the fastest growing counties in the United States. We face growth pressure and enrollment pressure that's ebbs and flows with the economy, and so we find ourselves in this constant build cycle, very capital intensive and debt intensive, and so I feel as though our voters have kept up with debt levy requirements. It's a challenge. While other suburban schools might be trying to figure out if they should add Italian or Russian for their foreign language components, we're trying to keep Spanish and keep our young learners getting the special services that they require. It's one of those situations where we're really trying to hold the program together with bailing wire and duct tape.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Additional questions? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Zerwas, for bringing this bill. I have several questions, but maybe I can just take offline with you. But very quickly on that point, So compensatory, of course, is, you know, funds that we make available for a variety of students that face, you know, additional, you know, barriers to an equitable education. Much of that is tied to economic status or some other socioeconomic status, such as, you know, language issues, et cetera. So what's happening, particularly in the Upriver School District, relative, I mean, so I get the whole thing around growth, right? But obviously there's something I think you're responding to that's more than just, you know, middle-class homes being built, that there's something happening with the socioeconomic dynamics of the Upriver community that banks this kind of investment. They're typically targeted for low-income kids. So what's happening there? And it doesn't have to be a long one because this is not just an education issue, but you know, part of why I'm asking is I want to make the point here that there's the reason here has to be, you know, connected to these students, and it's our way to respond to that. So what's happening in Elk River and the other districts relative to this issue?
Yes. Representative Wes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Pornani. I think that's an excellent question. I think to provide a little bit of context, the Elk River School District and the Elk River Area School District is a very large school district by landmass, stretching from the very west end of Elk River over to Ramsey and Anoka in the north. To south, it goes from Zimmerman down to Rogers. It's in Hennepin County in Rogers. It's in Wright County in Otsego. It goes as far west in Otsego along I-94 to the Albertville Albert Malls. It's a very large county, and it's not every portion of that area is an affluent area by any stretch of the imagination. We have a large rural component, and then down into Rogers, we have a lot of families that are moving out of the cities and into Rogers, and it's a very diverse, the southern part of the district is a very diverse part of the district.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, now I'll just be super brief. You know, I think that that these kind of the responses seem appropriate. We've created this instrument precisely for these kind of issues. What I'm struck with, though, is having this conversation right here, right now, independent of what we're doing to support low-income communities through the other things that we do, particularly some of the rumor mills, you know, that are spreading around relative to the Health and Human Services budget, which is one of the primary ways in which this legislative body provides support for struggling families precisely in order to have healthy communities. So I do applaud the effort here. I want to make sure that we continue to have this conversation consistent in terms of the investments that we make as a legislature in these families and these communities that cuts across not just education but also in health and human and transportation and other issues as well. You don't need to respond to that. I just want to make sure that, you know, we're having not just an isolated conversation, but one where we're going to hold up these values consistently across our decisions here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, how would I move 709 up to the list on top?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, under the bill that's in front of you, the districts are sorted in enrollment for the top 20 largest school districts in the state. I printed just the first pages. The remaining districts would not be eligible. Duluth's, I believe, about 7 or 8 down on the list. So if you were to amend the bill to include the top 30, that would cover a district like Duluth. I'll double-check real quick, but I think their baseline revenue in the Duluth School District might be above the $1,400 per pupil already. But I'll double-check that real quick here.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative
Tice. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had probably a similar question to what Representative Murphy did. So could you just say again, when I look at St. Cloud, their baseline revenue is $1,375, so that puts them out of contention. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, the way I read the bill is that the compensatory revenue continues to be calculated the current way it does, which is at the site level. And so you're not seeing the site data underneath this. And if the site is below the 1,400, that rolls forward. And that's, I think, why the St. Cloud number is showing is a zero there, even though the baseline revenue per enrollee is $1,375. If it were calculated all at the district level, that'd be a $25 difference, and it'd be that $25 times the I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. My mind is a little messy today. The column to the right of that, Madam Chair, the 2,408, that's the baseline revenue per free and reduced lunch student. That's the number that the 1,400 compares to. Okay. So each of the sites in St. Cloud essentially is above that level, and so there's no additional revenue. The ones at the top of the page with zeros are those that are over that 1,400, but it's that fourth to last column, baseline revenue per free and reduced lunch student, not baseline revenue per enrollee, that the formula is keying off. Again, my apologies for that. And one other thing that I noticed when I sorted this at the last minute, that the four subtotals at the top are wrong when I sorted. Those went nuts. The individual district amounts are still all right, and the state total at the very top is correct. But the four subtotals got inadvertently mixed up when I sorted, so I apologize for that. But the end result is fine on the last three columns, but the subtotals on the first four lines there are in error.
Okay. So, members, just to be clear, he's talking about the subtotals at the top of the page where it says Minneapolis-St. Paul, other metro, greater Minnesota, and charters, just to disregard that. Representative Tice, are you good? Okay. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Rep. Zerwas, I'm not without sympathy here. I know you've got some challenges. I think it was maybe 3 years ago that the African-American graduation rate in Elk River dropped 15 percentage points in 1 year. And I'm aware you've been making your way back up. But I am trying to understand some of the data here. I assume that you've got the sheet that Mr. Strom presented.
I do not have that sheet.
Thank you, Representative.
I have that sheet.
Very good. It shows Elk River as having a free and reduced price lunch rate of 15.1%. But the state says it's 7. I'm getting two different data points. One says 15.1. The other says, I think it's 17.3. Either one puts you in the bottom quartile of just these 20 districts. The state average is 30-some percent, so below half of the state average. What number should I be looking at there? What is your free and reduced price lunch? Uh-oh, he's reaching for his phone or...
Calculator.
Calculator.
All right. Mr. Hine is doing some calculating for us.
I think the challenge is, and Mr. Madam Chair, and Representative Daddy, I think one of the challenges is, and this was touched on a little bit earlier, is one of our challenges is with so many facilities and so many buildings that as we don't have the concentration of free and reduced lunch in one portion of the district or in one building, that we're not going up on the compensatory by the site. And I think that's the challenge. Is that as that compensatory aid kind of gets watered down, is what can you do with that money in one site? I'm being handed a calculator that says 17.6.
17.6. All right, Madam Chair. Thank you, and to the gentleman from the business office, since you're the guy with the calculator. do you know what percentage of that 17.6 qualifies for free, mm-hmm. and what for reduced? And this is amazing. That he can do this.
This is why they have the job they do.
Yes.
Mr. Hine, I'll give you a moment to run those calculations.
About 12.5% would be free, and thus the other 5.1 reduced.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just still quite low. So thank you very much. That helps.
Thank you. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is probably for Mr. Strom. If I'm looking at this spreadsheet and one of my school districts is on there, what column should I be looking at to see
if this legislation would provide a benefit to them.
Thank you. And Mr. Strom, why don't you just quickly explain the spreadsheet and the calculations?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jurgens, the fourth to last column shows the current law compensatory revenue per free and reduced lunch student. And the reduced lunch students under the current compensatory formula count as half, which is why there's the difference between the 17% number that the business manager just spoke to and the 15% number on this. So if we use the Elk River line as the example, which is about seven lines down, the fourth to last column shows that they get $637 per free and reduced lunch student of compensatory revenue. The bill essentially says that a district that qualifies comes up to $1,400 of revenue if it's below that level. And so you can see that for Elk River, the $637 is lower than the $1,400. The difference between those is the third to right-hand column, the $763 per free and half-reduced lunch student. And that times the free and half-reduced lunch student comes to a total of $1.5 million of additional revenue. And then that last column essentially says how much revenue on a per-student basis is it, so that it compares to other formulas when we're looking at revenue per student. So for your district, if your district in that fourth-to-last column is below $1,400 per pupil, then the third-to-last column will show the increase that you'll get per the adjusted lunch count, which is the free lunch count plus the half reduced lunch count. And then the second to last column will show the total revenue that you would receive under this provision. And the final column is essentially how much is that per kid, per student. And so those are the relevant columns here. The first several columns go through the calculation to arrive at that compensatory revenue number.
Perfect. That's what I needed. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Thank you. All right. Not seeing any other questions, final comments, Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing the bill and for the good conversation. I know there are districts that that fall into this area, especially districts that have really large areas and several buildings that, as those free and reduced lunch students are spread out through the district, even though you don't have high concentrations in a particular school or a particular geographic part of the district, it's our responsibility to teach those students and to provide those services to the students, and that's why this bill is coming forward, and I thank the committee for their time.
All right. Thank you, Representative Zerwas, and I will renew my motion that House File 2104 be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill or action at a later time. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here. Appreciate it. All right. Let's see. Let's now go to House File 1963. Representative Lohmer, you're here and ready, and Representative New is in another committee presenting another bill. So move you up on the list. And Representative Lohmer, I will go ahead and move that House File 1963 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or action, further action at a later time. Welcome to the committee. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 1963. Sorry. So the goal of this legislation is to ensure that the financial interests of the state and the taxpayers are protected, and that careful capacity planning by school districts takes place when taxpayers have voted in favor of a school district bond or levy. This legislation also requires that the funds be spent by the school district consistent with the purposes provided to the Department of Education during the review and comment process. This proposal helps to ensure that school closures are thoughtfully planned decisions that reflect long-term trends rather than a reaction to short-term conditions. This proposal requires that if a district decides to close a school and then wants to expand or build another school within 5 years of the school closure, they need to return to the taxpayers for a vote of approval. School districts deserve to have flexibility in planning how they allocate and spend funds. Taxpayers deserve assurances that the funds will be spent for the stated purpose on the ballot. Taxpayers also have the right to require approval for additional spending for increased instructional space when proposed soon after school closures. So, just want to add a few things. Unless approved by the voters, House File 1963 will prevent the use of school district funds for acquisition of a net new instructional space if a schoolhouse has been closed within 5 years. House File 1963 will ensure that careful long-range planning takes place before decisions are made to close existing school buildings or acquire new facilities. So sections 1 and 2 of the bill require a public referendum if the school district wants to use its capital levy or its lease levy to increase net instructional space within 5 years of a decision to close a schoolhouse. These levies could still be used for nearly all the purposes currently allowed, such as a roof repair or other building projects, or leasing for storage purposes, without restriction. House File 1963 also will protect the voice of the voters when a bond referendum has already taken place. So Section 3 will modify the credit enhancement program for school districts, under which state provides a guarantee for local debt obligations, to make it available only to those districts that follow through in a wholly consistent manner on building projects as submitted to the Commissioner of Education for review and approved by the voters. Likewise, Section 4 provides the same wholly consistent standard for school building projects as submitted to the Commissioner of Education for review and approved by the voters when a school district issues bonds. So with me today are Krista Thomas and Allison Tamarick, their constituents. They want to share the situation that transpired in Stillwater School District and the genesis of this bill. And I just want to add, you know, this has happened in similar situations across the state, not only Stillwater, even though they're going to discuss Stillwater. So it's happened in Rochester, it's happened in Duluth, and it's happened in Robbinsdale. So there's kind of a pattern here. So they're going to share with you now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and welcome to your testifiers. And for any of you testifying, please to state your name before you provide your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Allison Mark, and I'm a parent and a taxpayer in Stillwater. Thanks for the opportunity to be here and discuss and support HF 1963, and thank you to Representative Lohmer for bringing this bill forward. I'm here today to talk about what happened in our community in Stillwater and how it contributed to the evolution of this bill that is important to citizens in all parts of the state of Minnesota. Not long ago, the Stillwater School District campaigned for and eventually received voter support for a nearly $100 million bond to create improvements in our district. They persuaded public support for the bond by submitting to voters a description of the planned improvements, which was essentially an outline of the Minnesota Department of Education review and comment summary, and that's the document that has been provided to you. Within 6 months of passing the referendum, major changes and deviations from stated campaign promises were made, including the closure of 3 elementary schools. The changes are shown on your document by the red X's. Due to these deviations, a local parent filed a lawsuit to try to hold the district accountable to the promises that they had made to voters. Unfortunately, that parent lost the legal case because the judge stated that the current law only holds the district accountable to the, quote, ballot language. Now, the ballot language only includes a few short, nondescript sentences on the ballot, and this essentially gave the district a blank check. It seriously compromised the integrity of the relationship between the school board and the taxpayers. To further complicate the situation, the district requested a lease levy to tax citizens for additional increase in instructional space on a newly constructed elementary school, while at the same time closing 3 fully functional, usable, and paid-for elementary schools. Sadly, through this experience, it was discovered that numerous other examples of similar bait-and-switch scenarios have occurred across the state. It has also become apparent that trust in school boards and also the potential to pass future bonds and levies is in peril. This bill just isn't about Stillwater. Stillwater just happens to be a good example of what has happened. And although the ship has likely already sailed on our Stillwater situation, a valuable lesson has been learned. Taxpayers should have reasonable assurances that when bond campaigns are sold to the public, the money will be used for the purposes intended. If changes need to be made, they should have to go back to the taxpayers and get permission. Otherwise, why would any bond campaign run on profit? Especially if there are no consequences for reallocating the money. This bill provides assurances that the people's will is being honored and that taxpayer rights are being secured. It prevents the potential for future bait-and-switch maneuvers. It works to provide accountability that will restore trust between taxpayers and school boards. This will secure future bonds and levies that will help create new and meaningful educational opportunities for the children of Minnesota. The bill does not infringe on the ability of a school board to devise and bring forward thoughtfully planned proposals, including expansion of educational space. It simply encourages carefully planned proposals that are accurately depicted to and supported by the taxpayers. The language in this bill is protecting the best interests of the students and the taxpayers by creating a construct in which school boards are given the freedom and the accountability to do their jobs well. Thank you for your time and consideration on this important bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kromarek, and welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to speak, and thank you for Representative Lohmer for bringing this important bill forward. My name is Krista Thomas, and I am a taxpayer and parent in Stillwater, and I support this bill. So at times we see legislation that's built on hypothetical scenarios that's built as a safeguard. Unfortunately, we have seen real-life examples here across the state of Minnesota in places such as Stillwater, Robbinsdale, Duluth, and Rochester, and it's just wrong. Voters were deceived and still feel deceived today. Taxpayers supported a bond that weren't fulfilled as promised, and they are now facing funding levies on top of that. So current statutes currently allow this to happen without taxpayer approval. Some may argue that taxpayers have potential remedies at the ballot box or by pursuing the court system. Well, something compelling that we learned in the Stillwater scenario is that 62% of the voters in Stillwater voted for school board candidates that were against the school closures. In an expensive district-paid survey, two-thirds of the community stated they were opposed to breaking bond promises. So due to the timing of the election cycle, voters may have to wait up to 2 to 4 years in order to affect change. An incredible amount of damage and erosion in trust can happen within 2 to 4 years. And voters should not have to wait up to 4 years to have their bond promises fulfilled. Also, going to court is not a great option. It's costly, it's inefficient, and it's burdensome to all involved. As we saw, pursuing the avenue under laws written today is not successful. Voters going into the booth are expecting that the promises marketed to them is what they're going in to vote on. The condensed ballot language shouldn't need to be second-guessed, nor should our ballots need to be multiple pages long. This is why stronger policy is needed and what is accomplished through this bill. We don't want to create situations where taxpayers have to take districts to court. This bill will provide taxpayers protective means while strengthening the relationship between the community and the school districts. So if the ballot box and the litigation is the answer, then what about the Minnesota Department of Education? There's an extensive process in place, and why isn't that enough? Several of us have spoken to the Commissioner of Education and MDE to ask, well, what happens when districts don't implement the plans as provided during the review and comment process? MDE has stated that they do not have statutory authority to what happens during the referendum plans once they sign off on them. So this deficit is another reason why legislation is needed to make the review and comment process meaningful. Lastly, a strength of this bill is that it does allow districts to expand if necessary. What this encourages is for districts to thoughtfully plan for future and limits taxing citizens without their consent after school closures. For example, if a district wants to expand instructional space within 6 months of school closing, they can do this with taxpayer support. This is an ideal example of truly functional local control. With sound logic, rational, and trust, the community will support the school district. This bill helps to accomplish those things for all across the state of Minnesota, and it will make easier for the districts to secure money from their citizens in the future. Thank you very much for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thomas. Are there any questions for these witnesses? And are there any other witnesses that you have, Representative Wilmer? We don't have any more right now. All right. Questions? Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lohmer, how does this bill account for school districts that have changing demographics? I think that was the case in Stillwater, where the students that were previously in a certain area of the district, that area didn't have young students anymore, and they were in another part of the district. How does this still give the school districts flexibility to adjust and make changes when their demographics change?
Representative Lomery? Ms. Thomas?
Yeah, Representative, thank you for the question. It's a good one. So what this does is it does provide a district to be able to do that. So in a point in time when there is a changing demographics, and typically a school district can predict that out 3 to 5 years, as long as there's taxpayer support in doing so, a district can absolutely change and add on to and build onto instructional space as that.
Representative Jurgens.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? And I think we may have other testifiers, though. Are there folks with concerns? Please come forward. Thank you very much, Ms. Thomas and Ms. Romarek. I make sure I'm pronouncing that right. If you want to just stick close in case there's another question that comes up for either of you. All right, welcome, and you both all know the drill, so just introduce yourselves. Welcome.
My name is Gary Amoroso. I serve as Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just want to share a couple of thoughts about the bill. Did have a chance to just spend a minute or two with Representative Lohmer and share some of our concerns. Subsection 1 and 2. Concerns about the 5 years. We think that actually does tie the hands of a district. While I'd like to hope, and as a superintendent, I always thought we could project out 3 to 5 years, that's not the reality all the time. Depending on the size of the district, depending on situations, you have economic conditions that can change. You have enrollment conditions that can change. We have legislative conditions that change. We've recently approved all-day K. We have pre-K now as an opportunity. Those types of situations can cause a district, even through the best planning, to need to make modifications in a way that would not necessarily coincide with the timing of having a referendum. And also there's an additional cost to that referendum that a district would have to bear. I respectfully believe that we do have a checks and balance system in place. And that checks and balance system is, if anyone believes that a district has acted in a manner that is not in accordance with the law, they have the right to take legal action. And without getting into specifics, that did happen in this case, and the district was not found to have violated the law. I think that's important to realize, that I get concerned anytime we start talking about a piece of legislation that is really based on one or two or three situations. When you look at all of the bonds and levies that are passed in this state, I think it's very concerning that we're thinking about making a significant change based on a few examples. And lastly, when you look at the conversation of checks and balances, it is the ballot box. All of you sit here are elected representatives. Every member of the school board is an elected representative. If the community truly believes that the school board or individual members have been untrue, have been, have not given the appropriate, decisions based on what the public thought, those people can be voted out. That's democracy. That is democracy in action. So I respectfully request that you seriously consider moving this bill forward. I do not think it's in the best interest of our districts. And then in the end, to me, that means it's not in the best interest of our students. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I want to state for the record that I apologize to Representative Lohmer for not sitting down and walking through our concerns with her on this. But let me start out as school districts are a local government. And if you look at our other partners, cities and counties, they are given a significant portion of levy authority on an ongoing basis to meet all kinds of needs, everything from facilities to pensions. School districts are unique, and I want to say the poor cousin of the other local governments, for the fact that we do have to go to the voters and ask their opinion about how they want their school district to do go forward, and they do. Some of the problems that this bill would cause with this five-year moratorium on instruction space, Gary mentioned the idea about state aid. You know, you gave us all day K. What if you decided to give fab labs to school districts around the state? Or you develop a cool NASA program that we wanted to, you know, bring to all the schools around the state. There are things on the state legislative level that really impact instructional space. Also, consolidation impacts instructional space. And we've got one going on right now in outstate Minnesota. And the fact that they want to consolidate those schools down would be limited by this bill, too. And lastly, the idea that there could be an influx of students into an area. And at that point, or, you know, would that limit us in going forward? And I just think this is one more big mandate on the school districts going forward. The checks and balances are clearly already in the law. If you read this section of law, it's pretty clear how you go. And the appeal system, if you think there's malfeasance in office or you think the school district didn't follow the law with the bond referendum, you can take it to court, as these folks did. I mean, this actually demonstrated that the system worked going forward. And I want you to consider that document we give to MDE early on, the review and comment, has to be signed by the commissioner. So the commissioner could always choose not to sign it if they didn't like what they saw. But it's a sketch as you go forward, and we fill it out as we go on. So, for instance, that review and comment doesn't come with exact bids for everything in a school district to go forward. I had an example just today from a superintendent who's in the audience who was building a new school, and they had it set, and they'd gone to the public and asked. And as they were getting to the fine-tuning, the city was going to tax them $2.1 million for building where they were because they wanted to build roundabouts, they wanted to redo the sewer systems around, and there was no money in the budget to pay those kinds of taxes. And it was not clear to the district going forward, even after a public campaign. So they eventually moved that school into the county where they didn't have to face the $2.1 million in taxes. But you could make an argument that you know, this bill would limit their ability to do those kinds of savings going forward. I think this is not something we need going forward. We need your help and support, and we kindly ask you to vote against this bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. And is there another person who wishes to testify? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carl Blondin. I live in Stillwater, Minnesota. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a parent of a student, a parent of a graduate of Stillwater Area High School, the husband of a graduate of Stillwater Area High School. I have quite a few in-laws who are graduates and other relatives graduates of Stillwater Area High School. I have been somewhat active in as a citizen and school district politics for a number of years, not running for office, but expressing my concerns. I guess I have a little bit of a reputation as a fiscal conservative. I see a lot of problems with this law. It is a big change in the way the law in Minnesota is now. Looking at the first section, section 1, 15B, notwithstanding paragraph A, within 5 years of the school board's final decision to close a schoolhouse under section 123B.51, subdivision 5, the levy under subdivision 13A must not be used to increase net instructional space unless approved by a majority of voters at a public referendum. Well, does that mean that any school district within the last 5 years, its increased space must go back and get an approval? Or is it just districts like Stillwater that are in the middle of a large construction project? What if a school district has a generous benefactor who's willing to donate an electron microscope, a mass spectrometer, and other science equipment? You'll have to excuse me, I'm not a scientist, but would require the addition of a lab. Let's say the district has $1 million in its capital fund. It could not simply take that $1 million and build a lab. It would have to go out and get approval from the public before building that lab to perhaps receive $2 or $3 million of scientific equipment. When we look at Section 3 of the change, to be eligible for state payment under this section, a debt obligation for a project requiring review and comment under Section 123B.71 and Subdivision 8 must only be spent on purposes wholly consistent with the information required under Section 123B.71, Subdivision 9, Clause 4. This is not only a change in the law, it's a sea change in Minnesota law. Presently, the only question that school district voters are given is, may we tax you X dollars? And the district can list things it intends to do. It is not a promise that every penny will be spent or every project will be completed. About a lifetime ago, there was a case involving a city in northern Minnesota, and the name of the case escapes me, where instead of, during the Depression, instead of spending $3 million on a building, the city spent about $350,000. Someone brought a lawsuit, and our Supreme Court said no. When you ask the voters for permission to tax, that's a ceiling. It's not a guarantee on the amount. This law significantly changes levy law in the state of Minnesota, and it changes it only to school districts, putting school districts on different footing than cities and counties. I have problems with Section 4. It appears to be somewhat contradictory. The way the law is now, when money is raised in a bond referendum, the taxing authority, the school district, may use it for a project, but if it doesn't use it, it may use it to defease the obligations on the bond, pay principal, pay interest, pay any penalties. This seems to take away the discretion of the school board to abandon bad ideas, to adjust to changes. I think we have to ask a question. Is the system broken? If the answer is no, there is no reason for this bill. Now, two of my fellow citizens came up and testified for the political reasons in favor. Let me offer some political reasons against it.
All right, and Mr. Bonin, I will ask you to be very brief and give you about one more minute to wrap up.
Our school district has 10 elementary buildings. If the Stillwater Area School District had the same number of elementary buildings per number of students as Matamidi, Moundsview, or Minnetonka, we would have 5 elementary buildings. Our district is spending far too much money on operations and maintenance and far too much money on building-level administration. The change will mean Stillwater will have 7 elementary schools, 40% more than other districts that perform well. That's still a generous opportunity for change. There is dissent in Stillwater. This bill is not about solving a problem. It's about creating a problem for the Stillwater School Board. Quite frankly, the people proposing this bill don't want to solve a problem, and they don't want to be the ones to do it. They want the legislature to impose it. Because should they take over the school board, decide to reopen those schools, I can tell you as a person who served on the school district's finance review group 2 years ago, it will gut our college preparatory program at Stillwater High School. Not to brag, I graduated from Carleton College. I know what's needed to prepare people for a competitive academic environment. Our school district will lose that ability if this bill is passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blondin. And I think that's it for testifiers that I'm aware of. Anyone else wishing to testify? All right. Questions for any of the testifiers that have presented? Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, a question I think either for you or not counsel. The last testifier in particular, but all the testifiers, have brought up issues related to tax law and civil law in terms of the court's decision on interpreting the ballot language and related issues. Is this bill going to go to either of those committees? I guess I'm back on my committee jurisdiction thing that I was on yesterday. My apologies. But at least I'm consistent.
Well, it was the intention to just lay this over today. I would be happy to consult with the chairs of the Civil Law and Tax Committee. I don't know that I see necessarily that jurisdictional boundary. I mean, yes, the subject was the topic of a lawsuit that ensued, but I don't know that that would trigger necessarily a referral by the language of this bill to civil law. But the chair of the Civil Law Committee is here, and she's taking a look. So
that's true.
I'm sure she would assert her jurisdiction if that was something that she felt was needed.
Well, Representative Scott, I got your back, apparently.
Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Dabney, thanks for looking out for me. But I don't see any civil law provisions in this. I look at the statutes that are addressed, and there's nothing in here. I mean, I think it was alluded to the fact that a disgruntled citizen can always bring something to the courts, but if I heard a bill every time that was the case, then I'd be carrying a lot more bills than I do. So, but I appreciate you thinking a few steps ahead.
Thank you. I think there's still the tax question because these are bond referendums.
Yeah.
And I'm just not clear on the history here of tax referendum, bond or operating levy referendums, and whether those bills traditionally travel to taxes as part of the oversight or if they're solely the jurisdiction of this committee. And I'll defer to counsel on that.
Yeah, and Mr. Strom, just in my looking at this, it doesn't change necessarily sort of the levy process and that, but does put restrictions on school districts on their exercise of that. Am I interpreting this correctly?
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe so. Representative Dabney, the Ed Finance Omnibus Bill always goes to the Tax Committee as well. At the risk of taking just a moment more, there are election issues as well, but I think in general this committee has asserted its primacy over K-12 bond issues and operating referendum amounts issues, even though those are seen by some as election issues. But I think it's a longstanding practice of this committee that anything that affects a school funding formula really belongs in this committee.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lohman, do you have the question that was on the ballot before you so we could hear what it contained? Because I get the impression that maybe it was a misleading question that the voters responded to, not knowing that perhaps there were nuances in the language.
Representative Lohman. Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, that's a great question. I don't have the wording with me. My testifiers may. I don't know if they do. I don't know if there's anybody in the audience that does. But I would just say that I think you're right. And what this bill really is about, if you all looked in your packets and saw this appendix, this is from the referendum planning that goes through MDE. You can see where the school district came and told, well, they went to MDE, and then they went to the citizens, and they said they were going to do improvements on all of these schools. And people in my district believed that, and they were actually told as well that if this bond referendum did not pass, that schools would be closed. And so there were people who actually took leave of absences from their jobs. They worked really hard to make sure this referendum passed. And within 6 months, they did a complete turnaround, and they X'd off these three schools. They didn't do any improvements to them, but they closed them. So this is truly a bait and switch. And so I'm not, do you have the wording? Okay, so I'm being told it was completely nondescript. It did not say. And that's why the judge said they were only being held to the language on the ballot. But so this is an attempt to correct that, so it can't be a bait and switch.
So, Representative Erickson, maybe it's ambiguity in these questions that we need to look more closely at rather than this kind of discussion. I don't know, but I think in future time we could have that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And I think a couple of things here. One is, you know, how long or complicated do you want the question to be on the ballot? And I know that's always a struggle with, you know, what kind of information is contained in the question. Is it clear to the voters what they're voting on? And that, but the other is, you know, it's probably difficult to, you can't put a chart like this or that kind of extensive information on a ballot. But, you know, my own district, not on a bond issue, but on a referendum issue, and other decisions have had some dissension within the school district. And I know when a district prepares a campaign to go out, there's an extensive amount of public outreach and meetings and discussion about what's going to be done with the money if approved by the voters. And so I do think there is a trust issue there and sort of a truth in advertising issue. Not discounting some of the testimony from representatives of the school districts that circumstances can change. But I do think as an overall policy, there should be an expectation that the information put forward in the plans to be followed if the money is granted by the community is going to be there'd be some fidelity with regards to adhering to that. So I think you raise a really important and sort of complex issue here. So other questions or comments? If not, I want to thank you, and I want to thank all the testifiers for being with us today on this issue. And with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1963 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much, Representative Wilmer. Okay. All right. So, members, we have secured the basement hearing room for 3 o'clock. So once we get to 2:45, we will adjourn. We will reconvene in the basement, we will recess. Thank you. We will recess, reconvene in the basement hearing room at 3 o'clock. If we don't get through the rest of our agenda by 2:45, which I'm going to suspect we may not. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, could I ask Mr. Kennedy a question?
You may.
About your earlier email today about a 9 o'clock meeting on Friday, is that a certain thing?
We don't know yet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And obviously we'll keep members as informed as possible. I'm continuing to get requests for hearings, and I try to grant as many as I can.
Almost a certainty.
if we can avoid it, it's just going to mean possibly a very late night on Thursday, but I'm not even sure that would get us there. So with that, I think Representative Moon, I think I saw her come in. Is she here? All right. So
this is my first bill.
Well, and you're off to a good start, Representative New. All right, the tradition continues. Thank you very much for the treats. We appreciate it.
I've learned by example of other freshmen not bringing trees.
Yes, it's
also not good.
Don't be that member. Is our admonishment. So
I don't have to learn through experience.
All right. So I would move that House File 2145 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And Representative New, welcome, and we're happy to hear about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I know time is short. I will be brief in my comments and turn some time over to testifiers. Madam Chair and members, thank you for hearing this bill. The purpose of House File 2145 is to ensure that all children are being served regardless of where they are receiving their compulsory instruction. Currently, elementary age students in non-public school are not eligible for guidance and counseling services, so this bill seeks to fix that. And with that, I will turn the time over to my testifiers, if that's okay.
All right. Very well. Welcome. Please come on forward. And if you would just state your name before beginning your testimony.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Cassidy. I've been a teacher and administrator for about 30 years and have worked in multiple school environments from pre-K through 12. I'm currently principal at Annunciation Catholic School in South Minneapolis. We have over 400 students from preschool to 8th grade, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak on behalf of my colleagues as you consider expanding counseling and mental health services to K-6 students in our schools. We do currently receive the counseling services for 7th and 8th grade, but certainly see the need for that to expand. This has become a serious topic among our principals in recent years, and we've seen a very sharp increase in students from all backgrounds who are dealing with mental health issues. I know for me, it's difficult for me to deal with these situations without the help of a counselor. While I'm trained in education and academic supports and have been learning different ways to meet the diverse learning needs of our students, I certainly do not have the depth of knowledge and support for the children dealing with these serious issues. When it comes to mental health issues, I do not want to risk doing it the wrong way. As a school, we made the decision to try and support these students by hiring a counselor to work with us 2 days a week. And this person has been a lifeline for our staff and students in many situations that we could not deal with alone. In my first year, the counselor and I worked together almost daily to support Maggie, who was a third grade student who had been battling depression since first grade. Over the years, the counselor helped us work with the family and teachers to help her literally make it through each day. There were several times when we needed the counselor to help intervene when Maggie wanted to take her own life. With the support of the counselor and the school community, Maggie did graduate last year, and she still keeps in touch with our school counselor as she continues to work her way through high school. Last year, we also were dealing with a second grade student who did not want to live. His parents had recently separated, and he didn't see how his life could matter without his family together. He's not able to pull himself out of that depression on his own, but we need to service him so he can come to school and continue to learn and work. And our counselor has been crucial in helping us support him and his family so he can participate in school. Initially, we've seen a dramatic increase in students who are struggling. We have a first grader dealing with anxiety that prevents him from coming to school on so many days. We have other students who are dealing with depression and anxiety that also keeps them from feeling comfortable coming to class. They miss so much school, and that adds to their anxiety. We have multiple students now suffering from detachment disorder. Each student is unique in what they're feeling and how they react, and our counselors are providing us the insights to be able to begin to understand how to help. And their experience and expertise has been vital to our support for these students and families. We know when students are coming with this frame of mind, schoolwork, it doesn't matter. They're worried about living, they're worried about life, their basic needs. And so in learning doesn't matter for them either. That becomes much lower on their list. And in a class of students, sometimes these students can get quiet and kind of drift away. They may be overlooked, or sometimes they begin to act out and misbehave. And as a staff, we take this seriously. We want to serve all of our students. We want to do the best we can for them. And so we continue to seek resources. We're attending workshops. We invited PACER clinic workshops to come and give us more information on mental health issues so we can learn all we can. But it really does take a trained professional to understand and support students with these deeper mental health issues. It is not something you can learn in an hour or two like other trainings. And while we adapt to learning disabilities because we have our strong backgrounds in academics and we understand how students learn, we don't have the same tools to offer the students with mental health issues, and we cannot give them true support. Our counselors are helping them in ways that we cannot. However, the 2 days a week that we have our counselor, we have found is not enough for the students who are now battling these issues. It continues to increase. I'm calling the counselor almost every day of the week for advice and help. Students don't struggle only on the Tuesdays and Wednesdays that our counselors are at our school. So without this professional help, we really do risk losing these students. When it comes to their mental health issues, we really can't afford to make a mistake. I strongly believe that providing counseling support to the younger students in grades K through 6 is crucial investment in our children. If these issues go untreated or interfere with their learning over time, the children begin to fall behind. And by middle school, their problems are deeper, their academic challenges are greater. Having the support to treat these children when these issues first appear give them the best chance to succeed. So I really, truly thank you for allowing us this opportunity to share our stories. Our stories are many, just one of many that we have across our schools. We appreciate your consideration of expanding this funding. It can make the difference to so many children. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Cassidy. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the members of the Education Finance Committee. My name is Carrie Staples, and I'm privileged to serve as principal of St. Alphonsus Catholic School, which is in Brooklyn Center. We're a small Catholic school. I have 170 students from the cities of Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis, Crystal, New Hope, Ridley, Maple Grove, and other surrounding communities. These communities have seen a change over the last few years, becoming first-ring suburbs where families from many of the African nations, Mexico, Laos, or Vietnam are settling and living with their families. This alone is a hurdle in our community that the economic struggles of our families face, that the economic struggles that our families face are real, and their sacrifice to send their child to a Catholic school that is tuition-driven shows their commitment to their children. 41% of my students receive free or reduced lunch, and 50% of those students receive some tuition assistance. No family ever receives a full scholarship, as we believe all of our families need to have a level of financial commitment and be invested in their child's Catholic education. When you walk through the halls of St. Al's, you will see a very diverse community, and students are a part of our amazing family. At St. Al's, we are committed to honoring all with dignity and compassion, empowering leadership through service, and igniting the spiritual life of all of our students. We discover and value the strengths of our students and challenge them to achieve their full potential as lifelong learners. As you heard in this mission, we are not only about the academics. We want our students to leave us with skills of leadership, perseverance, compassion, and so much more. The teachers at our school are remarkable, and when they choose us for their profession, they knew they were choosing a job where they're not just the academic leader, but they're the mom, the coach, the nurse, the cook, the referee, and now the counselor. When our students enter the doors each morning, they come to us with so many experiences we cannot even imagine. Some students have spent the night at an auntie's house because their mom or dad works overnight. Some of the students have been in daycare for the same reason. Some have not had breakfast, or the lunch they had the day before was their last meal. Some are staying with relatives as their parents are traveling out of the country or living in another country. Some come in tears with tears in their eyes due to an interaction they've had with an adult in their home. Some have no idea if today is the day that their family may face deportation. They come to us with so many stories, and trying to get them all on an even playing field in the academic arena is next to, if not impossible. This is where counseling services help us. Our annual budget does not allow for many extras, but I am committed to having a counselor that is very part-time. At this point, I can provide a counselor 1 day a week with our students in grades, for our students in grades K through 6 within my budget. Our counselor, Erin, has been a gift to our teaching staff and our students. She's intervened and helped on numerous occasions. Some examples include a fifth-grade child whose mother is battling alcoholism. Since first grade, this little girl has been the adult in her house. She has had to help her younger brother with homework, getting him dressed in the morning, getting them both on the bus. Erin has helped her understand it's okay to ask for help, how to ask her dad for this help, and Erin has been an important part in allowing this family to find help for this disease as well. We have a second grade girl who struggles every day with tantrums and outbursts. Erin has met with a family who is from Africa to explain what mental health issues are and how they're affecting their daughter. What has been eye-opening for all of us is how different cultures see mental health issues and how they treat them. Erin has done the research and communicates effectively with this family.
a kindergarten family who is now dealing with the release of a relative from prison who was involved in sexual abuse against one of our students. Aaron has worked with the parent as well as the teacher on how to work with the student, words to use to help her realize that school is her safe place. She has also found resources for the parent for outside help for the entire family. Over the course of the years Aaron has been with us, we've had students who struggle in school with academics. Because of the practice Aaron belongs to, we're able to have academic or behavioral testing done right at school free of charge to our families. This financial relief is welcomed by the families who would struggle to get the help they need for their child to help them with their academic and social-emotional success. Aaron has established friendship groups for some of our younger students who have trouble making friends. She has a lunch bunch where she brings in students who may be bullying others or don't know how to express themselves, and works through situations in a non-threatening way. She's also just an ear for the entire staff and myself when we have a student who's just off. Our students could use a counselor 5 days a week. Mondays are not just the day that they have issues. The majority of our students leave us after eighth grade and go off to a Catholic high school. However, more and more of our students are leaving after eighth grade and entering the public school system. Both systems have counseling available, but waiting till the time to begin getting them the help that they need is far too late. Our children and their families are making enormous sacrifices to attend a school that allows them to practice their faith, that is financially handcuffed and unable to provide the counseling services so many of these children require at this formative age. I firmly believe that helping non-public schools support counseling services in the kindergarten through sixth grade setting is vital to the development of a healthier whole child and can help counseling as they grow older. Having counseling services to all of our children is going to allow our teachers to do what they do best, and that is to teach, and leave the counseling to the professionals. In order to allow students to reach their full potential, we need more resources to let teachers teach, counselors counsel, and give every child every opportunity to develop into intelligent, healthy, and well-rounded leaders for our future. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Staples. Any questions for these testifiers or for the author? Representative Sunstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Part of this bill is also talking about textbooks and subscription costs, different things like that. Maybe to the author, can you just tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Representative New.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Sunstead. Really, when this law was enacted, things like online textbooks didn't exist. So really, this is just, it's not changing any funding for those textbooks. It's just allowing us to catch up to technology.
Representative Sanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It also includes registration fees for AP courses delivered online.
Correct. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, those things do not change any funding. It simply says that software educational technology can also be defined as online courses.
Representative Sanson?
No, thank you. Thank you.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The treats were excellent.
Hopefully they'll help.
My question also is with the extra things that this bill covers. Why couldn't a non-public school child who's having some serious issues, they're covered for some health services, why couldn't that child be referred out to their personal doctor and then get referrals for assessments and mental health services instead of relying on the school to pay for them?
Sure. I guess. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would refer to the original intent of the non-public pupil aid, and that is to ensure that all children are served regardless of where they're receiving that compulsory education.
Representative Sullivan.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would think, given the choice of where your child goes to school, that then they could use their personal medical insurance to handle mental health crises and counseling services and things like that. And I mean, you're getting money for these services. I would think a referral would be in line with my thinking.
I think Ms. Cassidy or Ms. Staples, did you have something to add?
I think what you're referring to, when we're talking about the mental health services, is having somebody on site to help support students when they even have issues during the day. We certainly work with our school districts right now when we see children who are, through our after accommodations, are still struggling, and work with the district, and if they need to be assessed or try and match them up with services that may provide an evaluation or a diagnosis. But what's most important here, and I think the difference we see in our schools, even for us right now, we do receive the counseling services for 7th and 8th graders as a K-8 school. Having somebody come into our school that works with these children during the day, or for the K-6 where we see these kids can have their struggles in the middle of the school day, we already know what the diagnosis is, and many of these children may receive counseling outside, but for them to actually make it through the day, having that support on site and to support our teachers as well, I think as Mrs. Staples said too, giving our teachers, who are primarily academic professionals, an understanding of the deeper mental health issues so we can continue to help these children succeed and really begin to form them and support their parents, because oftentimes the parents have no idea how to help these children as well. So this is beyond just an evaluation or a diagnosis or sometimes even that outside support, and is very necessary today for these children.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we recently heard some very moving testimony from the intermediate district that talked about severely mentally ill kids who, and they would love to have someone on site who could handle this. You're talking about regular school kids who are not in the crises that the intermediate kids are in and have been for many years oftentimes. And they would love to have someone on site all the time that could prescribe medication and could handle some of the crises, help handle some of the crises. And I, from my opinion, I would think that would be a lot more worthy of us spending money on, my opinion, for what it's worth.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wish that Mr. Strom would do an explanation of non-public pupil aid, and maybe it's history, please.
Thank you. Mr. Strom, very briefly.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, very briefly, as was mentioned, there are two parts to this. The first part is determining what cost basis is used to provide that service. When the non-public aid, and the second part is the use of the money by the non-public schools or the resource by the non-public schools. When the statute was passed, one of the big concerns at that time was a concern about entanglement on the church and state issues. So there were some very strong limits on what could be provided and where the service could be provided and how it could be provided. So, for example, with the textbooks, the title remains with the district. And the school folks could tell you how their districts work with their schools work with the local school districts, but often the district provides that service at a neutral site on behalf of the school, and they don't provide it in the school, so there's not an issue with the sectarian nature of the school. And so there's the two parts to it, and the counseling part falls under both sides. The costs for counseling that the non-public aid is computed under would go up because elementary services are included. And then on the distribution side, it would work the same way. The use could now be for elementary students in the way that the funding is directed, but again, in consultation with the school district. And again, the witnesses may want to very quickly tell you how their relationship works. But generally speaking, it's through the district that the service is provided.
So, Madam Chair, maybe the witnesses would note through which districts perhaps your aid flows.
Mm-hmm. St. Alphonsus is in District 279, which is Osseo Area Schools, and our money comes through them. Our current counseling services for 7th and 8th grade, we contract with a private counseling service who is then therefore paid by the district for our per pupil dollar for counseling services for 7th and 8th grade.
Same with textbooks. We order all of our textbooks through the district. They're shipped to the district, then to us. And our health, our nurse as well. We have a nurse that's given to us one day a week based on our enrollment.
And, Madam Chair, I think that's a good clarification for all of us to understand. But the money doesn't go to the private or parochial. It goes to the district who is receiving the non-public pupil aid.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Sanstead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going back to this part talking about the software registration fees, different things like that. Or actually, it's not. I'm looking for clarification. Is the fee you're talking here about, is it about registering the software or a fee for taking a course?
That would, my understanding is that, thank you, Madam Chair, my understanding is that that's the fee for taking the course.
My question then for the, thank you, Madam Chair, my question for the author, isn't the section talking about software?
Can you clarify?
Madam Chair, in my mind, a fee for a course versus a fee for registering a piece of software is a completely different issue. Mm-hmm. Where your language is falling under software and educational technology, that seems to be more software, hardware in my mind. And this is paying for something, obviously, other than software or hardware. And then you also include fees for taking AP courses delivered online. A question maybe for the author or maybe Mr. Strom. Do public school students have those fees paid for if they choose to take a course online?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, I'll let the author express her intent with whether the registration fee is separate from the course fee or not. I'm not aware of what exactly they're getting at there. In terms of when a public school student takes an AP or IB style course, with those courses, there's a separate state appropriation for some of the testing services. But generally speaking, the cost for that course is going to be provided through the district's regular funding for that student for that portion of time. And I'm not sure, we can do some checking. I'm not sure what percent of the public school AP courses are taken online versus with an instructor at site. I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you. And Representative Noon, did you want to comment?
Sure. I was just going to make it clear that it is for the registration fee. It is not for the course itself. So this is not providing tuition, per se. This is simply for the registration fee.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just looking at House Research's summary here, and it looks like, and I wasn't aware of this, you know, but it says here in the first paragraph, it says, a district must provide the same health services to pupils of non-public schools as it provides to public school pupils. So my question would be, do they offer counseling services in public school elementary settings?
Madam Chair, Representative
Strom,
I think the thing to keep in mind is the original language of the statute was all designed to be very cautious with the church-state relationship there. And so the idea behind that was directing the district to only provide, and the same applied for the non-public pupil transportation, to essentially provide the same service, nothing different than what was provided to the public school students, to the non-publics. But the way in practice that actually works is the dollar value of that service is calculated. The average per public school dollar value is determined, and then that service is provided for the non-publics. For the non-publics that apply for that, the dollar value is what controls the service. So essentially what they're providing in the same service is counseling, but the dollar value is limited to the statewide average that's spent for that. And because the thought is this all goes through the district, it's telling you to do what you're doing, but for the non-public students on a health and welfare basis. And as the testifiers said, in their case,
The contract was the manner in which their school district decided, but the decision lay with the school district as to how to make those counseling services available for the non-public student. And currently the statute talks about secondary counseling services, so that's where adding the words elementary would bring in the other grades for them.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mason?
Quickly, why was it originally only secondary?
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, I can't say for certain, but my guess is that when that passed, most of the counseling service that was provided was the career and guidance counseling at the secondary level. This was back in the early 70s when this passed, and much less related to the mental health needs that districts face now.
All right. Representative New, any final comments on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just appreciate your consideration of this bill. I think this is a really important issue to offer these mental health services, particularly for younger kids. I think that if we can help kids when they're young, it has a positive impact as they get older. So I appreciate your consideration.
All right. Thank you, Representative New. And I would renew my motion that House File 2145 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus or further action at a later time. Thank you very much to you and your testifiers, and thank you for the treats. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Representative Baker, we're going to try to get you up, and we'll see if we can get your bill done here by 2:45. I'm laying down the challenge, and then we will recess until 3 o'clock and move to the basement. All right. So I'll move that House File 535. Be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or further action at a later time. Welcome, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will take that challenge, and I think we're going to be successful with that. I'm going to speak very quickly. House File 535 is a very special school out in Wilma. Takes care of kids between 10 and 19 that need help. They've made some bad choices. They're in detention center, but we also want to make sure they get summer school. So we're just trying to find a little link. For the summer school component, we need to try to get these kids caught up. And I have a teacher and the administrator from the school with me today. We're going to make it very short. And I also think the fiscal note is being handed out as we speak. There is a small fiscal note to this, but Madam Chair, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And welcome to your testifiers. Each of you would just state your name before you provide your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Linda Bond. I'm the administrator for the alternative programs out in Wilmer, and I want to thank you for hearing us today. As you just heard, we are part of the school that really services students across the state of Minnesota. Most of the students that come to Prairie Lakes are not Wilmer students. They come from all over the place. And our school is unique in that the education that it does provide for our students. Kids do not just go on front of a computer. They actually have teachers in all core subject areas, which makes us unique compared to most facilities. Students, as we said, yes, many of them are there because they've made a bad choice. Some of them are there because of their life circumstances. But one thing that we do find when our students are there is they're ready to learn. They're ready to learn. They have three meals a day. They are safe. They are chemical free. They are ready to learn. We have this sometimes for our students, the first time in many years they felt this way. We have students who come to us. I have a student this year that was in 10 placements prior to getting to us about a month ago. Because of that, yes, they were in school at all those placements, and they took snippets of class, but never really finished a class, which means they're no closer to graduation than when they started in the fall. What we like to offer our students when they are there and they are safe and they can really optimize learning is a place where they can really get caught up. Summertime's a great opportunity for this. At this time, we do not have funding that allows us to have summer school for these students. And what we are wanting to do is we want them to have that opportunity. We want to close the gap for these kids. Many of these kids will be the first that graduate in their family. We have students that actually graduate while they are with us. So that is what we are really asking for. We want some money to help these kids so that they are successful, because we want them to be productive citizens. And again, we're servicing kids from all over the state of Minnesota, but when they're with us, they are our Wilmer students, and we want to treat them with all the dignity and respect that we would treat anybody that lived in Wilmer their entire life. I have Darren here who has some things to say as well.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Darren Anderson, and I'm a social studies teacher at Lake Park School and Prairie Lakes Education Center. This bill is really important to our school. A lot of the students that we serve very successful in school. Many of them are a year or two behind. And our summer programming allows these students not just to get caught up in credits, but to be successful students. We have a few students right now currently that are about ready to start wrapping up, getting caught up, more or less. I had a student just recently, I've got a couple of letters here, from students that have expressed their very gratitude to our program. I have a student, like I said, right now, who was about 13 credits short from graduating and would like to graduate with her graduating class this year. And when I had a conversation with her, she said she was 13 credits, she wanted to do the GED. And I talked to her about, well, by the time May comes around, you'll be about 6 credits short, and if you go through our summer program, you'll be graduated. So this summer program allows these students to get a second chance in school, to get an education. The most powerful tool that these kids can have is, in fact, an education. A lot of our students struggle in school because they didn't like school, they weren't successful in it, and I've had a lot of students who have said, you know, this is the best school I've ever been at. This school taught me that I'm important, that I don't have to be an A student, or I don't have to be the best student. I'm special to who I am, you know, of how I do. I'm important. And to these students, this school is a lifesaver. It's a lifeline to success. I had a student, a former student, just a few months back down at the Mall of America, who approached me 4 years later and looked at me and said, if it wasn't for you and if it wasn't for this program, I never would have graduated. I never would be going to college. I wouldn't be successful. You had a huge impact in my life. And that's huge. And to have a student say that, yeah, especially in the situation, the program they're in, that means the world to somebody like me, who our number one goal is to be their voice, to give them an opportunity. These students deserve to be treated just like any other student and to be given this opportunity. The last thing I will say with our school, why it's so important, is we don't just offer a blanket social studies or English or math. I myself, as a social studies teacher, I teach American government, geography, American history, and economics. So these kids get the same class schedule that a high school student at the Wilmer Senior High would get. They wouldn't, of course, be the exact same classes, but they would be getting the same credits. Our goal is to graduate these kids, give them a second chance, and help them become lifelong learners and to be successful. And that's what our summer program does. It helps these kids be successful and to get caught up and to continue their education.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Slocum has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for Mr. Strom. He's getting it today. Sorry. So sorry. We've gone back and forth about ALCs and charter schools and extended day, extended year funding. Because I had a bill, the charter schools only get 25% of the extended time funding at this point. And I also had a bill that provided a grant program for the sober schools and for, and then we had talked about ALCs and how they get funded for extended time, extended year. Can you review that for me?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Slocum, I believe the issue is a couple fold here. The biggest issue for Wilmer is because their regular ALC students are making a choice to be there, and so they qualify for extended time funding. Children who are placed in a center like Prairie Lakes are not making a choice, and as a result don't meet the definition. And so that's why, even though the ALC, I believe, is a single ALC, the teachers there aren't allowed to use extended time money for the children who are essentially involuntarily, they're not voluntarily choosing. There's, and I'm cognizant of the time limitations, Madam Chair. There's a number of issues all wrapped up with the area learning centers, but I think in this case, this is the important distinction, is the nature, the voluntary nature of the students' participation in the program.
And Mr. Strom, is that because the court system has placed them there?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the clarification. I'm just going to put a plug in for the charter schools that they receive adequate funding too. Many of them address the needs of kids that haven't made it in the traditional districts. In fact, some entire schools are made up of kids like that. And they have special needs too. And I would hope we could scrape together the pennies in the couch to fund them more than just 25% for their extended day and summer school programs.
Well, thank you. And I think you know the chair is very supportive of that with a very challenging target 2 years ago in the first go-round of this committee's finance bill. I was able to include that as one of our priorities of getting us at least to that 25%.
So. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate that. But let's send a message to our good speaker that we need some money.
Sure. I'm quite confident he's been hearing that. So, all right, any other questions, comments, Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, would if this were is included, then will the money, additional money, only go to Willmar School District for this particular care and treatment center, or will it be a statewide for other care and treatment centers where the children are not chosen to be there?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Murphy, and I'll just confirm with Mr. Sharman. It's my understanding it's just for the centers in Willmar, as the bill is written currently. Did you have another question, Representative Murphy?
No,
okay.
All right. I'll just get busy on an amendment.
We appreciate a heads up. Thank you. So, Representative Baker, why don't you close us out with a couple of comments?
Final word, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. I'm really proud of this school, and we appreciate your support. I just wanted to take 15 seconds to say the world of Minnesota lost a good friend education yesterday in Willmar. Our school board chairman passed away suddenly. He was 45 years old and left five young children, I think, five or six, six young children, a good friend, Jared Inez. And I just wanted to make a comment to you folks as education champions as well. He was a true champion in the Willmar School District, and I just wanted to say a shout-out to him and his poor family. And we're praying for them. It was a sudden thing. So, again, thank you for this hearing today, and we look forward to hopefully some better days ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And we are truly saddened to learn that sad news, and I please extend the committee's condolences to his family. With that, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 535 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, if you would please put your materials back in your folders. The pages will try to quickly transfer it down, and we will be in recess for 15 minutes, reconvening at 3 o'clock in the basement hearing room. Everybody's getting settled in here in the basement, and Representative Metza is here. And you have your testifiers, and you're ready to go?
I do, Madam Chair.
Very good. So, and we do have an amendment. So I'll first move House File 1324 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And then I will move the A4 amendment to House File 1324. And I will ask Mr. Strom to explain the amendment to committee members as soon as – oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Adrians. Pardon me. Ms. Adrians.
Madam Chair and members, we're going to give Tim a break, and I'll do a little bit of talking.
Make sure he gets a cupcake.
So what this amendment does, it is essentially the same idea that you'll see on, you know, at the very bottom of the bill. We just want to make sure that the what we're doing stays within compliance of the budget rules. So in order to extend an appropriation beyond, you know, to cross bienniums, what we're doing is we're canceling the amount of the what they assume will be unspent. And so in this instance, it's the $90,000 is what they have spent to date. And the unspent funds is the $410,000. So we will cancel that amount of money in 2017, and then we are reappropriating that same amount in 2018. And so by doing it in this manner, it stays within compliance of our budget rules.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Metza, for bringing this, because this just, I can just say that this paid for some another bill that I have that's $200,000 each year, so I appreciate it.
Yeah. And
well, let's go ahead and get the amendment added. All right. All in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So the A4 amendment has been added. And now, Representative Metza, please respond and whatever you'd like to say about your bill or to Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members and staff, for helping with this. Mr. Kennedy, I know this was a catch that you suggested to me, and appreciate Mr. Strom working with me over the weekend to get this in the shape so that we weren't affecting the budget in that way. So, Representative Scott, you're welcome. I hope you spend wisely and as much as you want. So hopefully that covers it. But this is essentially, I think, the House Research Bill Overview does a great job, and I know that the committee members have this, and I know that you're crunched for time. In the grants that were given out in 2016, there were some that were 3 years, some that were not. This happened to fall in the not category. And the mentality we had at the time the drafting we had done at the time did not account for that. So this is a fix to that drafting and would allow the funds to continue to get spent with the original intent in which we authored the grant.
All right, thank you. And you want to go ahead and move to your testifier now?
Yeah, this is Mr. Silko, who runs our EIP program, who can answer any questions anyone has. So,
all right, welcome, Mr. Silko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I am Joe Silko, Director of Education Innovation Partners. It's a collaborative of 22 school districts and 5 community colleges in northern Minnesota. We have 3 main focuses or strategies to what we are doing up there. We are actually a cooperative center which operates much like a school district, except we can't tax or bond. I essentially chase grant dollars to utilize for the programming to enhance the educational programming in northeast Minnesota. We have 2 main strategies, one focused around learning, one focused around teaching and leadership in education. The one that's specific to this grant was focused around the coordination and building of the Northeast Minnesota Center for Educational Leadership and Innovation, which it's not a structure, it's a program about high-quality professional development. Representative Metz was correct, we received a grant for $500,000 last year, which, by the way, had to be matched. And we got that matched in 1-to-1. So that grant was attained and was our plan. We are building a professional development program that we hope to have be sustainable after we're done with the 3 years of it. And so we need to roll it out in increments. And the plan has that rolled out in increments so that it's able to do that. I'm here to answer any questions that you may have. We're just asking that we are allowed to spend the money over the 3 years period instead of just having it all done at the end of June 17.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Silko. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Mr. Silko. So what kinds of professional development have you offered so far or do you plan to offer?
Mr.
Thank
Silko.
You, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. We are working with our leaders, our professional leaders, our teacher leaders, and our community, and our teacher leaders and our educational leaders as far as principals, curriculum directors, technology directors, superintendents. And we are working on a development partnership with Learning Science International, which has got some great high-quality research-based professional development that we are bringing to our districts. It's optional. It's not forced. Districts can be in it if they wish. Currently, we have 17 of our districts that are enrolled. And even at the level of teacher involvement. It's optional within the districts as well. We've had great success. We've had over 200 teachers involved up to date, and they're very excited about the programming and what we're bringing and how it will continue to roll out.
Representative Chair, thank you. So, Mr. Sokol, does that mean that the professional development then will be a part of presentations within courses that are offered in your schools, or you know, how will the teachers and school leaders show that there's a result behind this professional development?
Mr. Sokol.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, it's a great question. We part of this is building is changing the way, or having teachers become more aware of the way that they are teaching, so they get up to date, real time data and evidence that the standards have been achieved, that the goals of the instruction have been achieved, and so that they can provide that. All too often, our kids, as you well know, we provide instruction to them, whether it be small group or large group. We ask for a response. We get someone who raises their hand. They give the response, and we don't know about the other two people in that small group or 30 people in the large group, whether they received and understand what's going on until we assess them 2 weeks later, or three or four or nine, and in many cases it's too late. So there's a technology component that goes with this, as well as an awareness of the real-time instruction and how to gain that data by the instructional staff, as well as the understanding and knowledge by principals and leaders within the district about what to look for and how to help and assist teachers in gaining that.
Madam Chair, I think that's a great goal to have, and I think it'll really pay dividends for your cooperative.
All right, thank you. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sokol, did I hear you correctly in saying that it's optional for teachers to partake in this training?
Mr. Sokol.
Madam Chair, Representative Sandstead, that's correct. It's always been sort of EIP's mode of operation, if you will, that we don't, the program that we offer, we don't force it on whether it be teachers or staff or communities. If they don't want the technology that we provide or the staff development, they don't have to do that. Leadership teams from the various districts of the 17 that are participating listened to presentations and chose whether they wanted to participate or not. And then our recommendation to them has always been and will always continue to be the teachers within the district don't need to be forced to go along with this. It's only the ones that want to. And so we've had really good participation with that so far.
Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chair, I'm very familiar with EIP, and school districts have the choice. The district, the administration, has the choice of belonging to this or not. But once the actual professional development is rolled out, I know that EIP is evolving. This LSI is a new component. It was not optional for the staff. If a school district bought into it, the staff didn't have a choice. So I would just caution you on whether it's optional for teaching staff to partake in this. I don't think that's 100% accurate.
Mr. Silko, follow
up. Madam Chair, Representative Sassett, I'd really like to find out what districts that was, because I could show you the of the 17 districts, and I can show you the participation from each of those districts. And I'm not aware of internal conversations between leadership within those districts and the teachers about whether it was optional for them or not. That's what certainly was suggested. So if there's a specific district, maybe the one that you're most familiar with is one probably that you're referring to, and I'm not aware of any internal conversation there.
Okay. Other questions? Did you have your hand up earlier, Representative Murphy?
No.
Okay. Not seeing any additional questions. Final comments, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again, thank you, committee members. And I would just say that it is a work in progress locally. We are trying to think outside the box. We appreciate the general fund money and the grant, like other communities have received to do the same. We'd appreciate your continuation in supporting us moving forward, and on a local level, Representative Sandstead specifically, we will work together to make sure that it is as inclusive as can be for everyone who's participating. And I would hope that the district, which I actually went to a training that was offered about 3 weeks ago, on a little side note here for the committee, about 100 people were roughly there, I think, from administration, superintendents, and educators, technology, like Mr. Silko said. And I would hope that if people were going, that they weren't being forced to use, like, a personal day or something like that. And so I think there's some things we can discuss in that regard as we're moving forward, but it seemed to be well received and working from everyone I talked to who attended the meeting.
All right, thank you. Well, with that, we thank you for presenting this and for your testifier, and I would renew my motion that House Bill 1324 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or action at a later time. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so Representative Davini, Representative Grassl is here, so if we can do him real quick, and then we'll turn to your bill. And the fact that he's bringing Girl Scout cookies had nothing to do with my decision on who goes next, I assure you.
Fortunately, I have a staff set aside. This was short notice, but I figured I didn't want to come before the committee twice without bringing the snap.
This is a learning environment. Thank you, Representative Grassl. All right, and while you're getting us all situated so nobody goes hungry today, I'll go ahead and move House File 1886 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus or further action at a later time. So your bill is before us, and Representative Grassl, please explain your bill and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Relating to and committee members, relating to education finance, extending the early repayment aid incentive to Independent School District Number 36, Kellyer. Appropriating money amending laws in 2016, Chapter 189, Article 30, Section 25, Subdivision 5. And I have the superintendent for Kellyer School District here to address the bill.
All right. Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you. Basically, what happened was
And could you just state your name for the record so we have that on the table?
I'm sorry. Tim Lutz, LUTZ, Kellyer School.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Basically, through legislation that occurred last year, I guess I would call this an oversight, a number of schools who opted to pay back their capital loan principal were allowed to receive through legislation this early repayment aid incentive. And the formula for the aid incentive was more or less based upon the amounts of the principal that these districts were paying back. So about half a dozen schools were included in this legislation last year. Caledonia, LaPorte, Little Fork, and Roseau, and a couple others. And nobody can explain to me or has been able to tell me why, but for some reason Kellyer School was left off that list, even though we did make our principal payments and refunded our loan. So when I discovered that last year, I contacted a couple of legislators down here and was told that they would work towards getting this rectified or amended during the special session, which unfortunately didn't transpire last year. And then, as you know, there's been a lot of turnover. So the very people who told me they would work on it last year are no longer in office this year. So we've kind of started all over on ground level, but Representative Grassl and Senator Utke have been kind enough to work with us and to hear me out and to present these two companion bills. So
on behalf of Kellyer School, the amount would be $150,000 per year over the course of 5 years, and that would simply be added to the amount for the other six schools that they've been receiving.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Lutz. And just for the committee's information, this is something that I'm very familiar with. So in the supplemental bill last year, we offered the opportunity for schools under a maximum effort loan to get out from under those because the payments from the local taxpayers is very high. The maximum effort requires 29% tax rate, and it's a very significant and heavy burden for local taxpayers. And so I think what happened is that there was the calculations, I think, done on trying to predict which schools that were under the maximum effort would decide to take advantage of the repayment. Perhaps there was some question about whether Kellyer would, because you were pretty close to the end of your term, I think.
Right.
So that was not calculated, and there was a provision in the supplemental appropriations bills, because we also closed sort of a window, if you will, where schools that had those maximum effort loans were entering into the practice of issuing one-day bonds. And so with those one-day bonds, they were able to do some things with that money, and we closed that provision out because it offered the school some money, but they used it also as to not make payments on their loans. And I guess this chair is editorializing a bit, but that's how I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And so money was provided to school districts for a transition period of 5 years because they would no longer have those funds available. So unfortunately, Kellyer wasn't part of that because we didn't project that you were going to enter into the repayment. So that is the purpose of your bill. I'm proposing Representative Grassl and Mr. Lutz. So any questions? All right. I guess we've either wowed them or bored them with the details of maximum effort loans. But
I think everybody's on a sugar high now.
That's true.
Keep them chewing on cookies. They won't ask questions.
It's good. That's good. All right.
Bring some more next time.
All right. Well, thank you. Any final comments, Representative Grassl?
No, Madam Chair, but thank you for hearing us.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to be here. Thank you very much for I know you had to rush back over from the Senate where you were testifying, so we appreciate that.
My pleasure.
And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 1886 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or further action at a later time. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, Representative Dabney. All right, members, now we're going to hear House File 146, authored by Representative Dabney, full-service community school funding.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and thank you for the consideration given that now all of my, I believe all of my testifiers have come from more than 50 miles, so I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I'd like to move House File 146 to, let me see, if the motion of the day is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time?
Correct.
Okay, I've been practicing that.
Got it.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. 2 years ago, the Minnesota Legislature, us, appropriated $1.7 million to help support the full-service community school concept. We've now got 14 schools in the state who are developing full-service community schools. These are schools that work with their community, their students, their families, their community, to tackle not just the achievement gap, but the opportunity gap that so often leads to the achievement gap that we measure in schools. A full-service community school brings together public and private providers to put social, medical, and before and after school academic services and enrichment activities where they're most accessible, right there in the school. The site coordinators are key in the success of this model, and I am privileged to have a couple of folks who know of what they're doing in this concept with me today. Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to ask Michaela Auld from Brooklyn Center to take off. You are closer than 50 miles. My apologies.
Welcome.
Michaela Auld. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. and thank you, Representative Dabney and co-authors, for this bill. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name, as I said, is Michaela Auld. I'm Brooklyn Center Community School's first community school site coordinator for Earl Brown Elementary. As you are aware, Brooklyn Center Community Schools has served as the state's first and only full-service community school district for quite some time, working vigorously to respond to the needs of the whole child by reducing barriers to learning through on-site coordination of over 100 partnerships and services. We also pose as the state's leader for technical assistance, supporting other districts, community organizations, and other potential stakeholders who have expressed interest in this model. Since 2009, Brooklyn Center has provided positive outcomes across several indicators, from increased graduation rates, support and efforts for family and community engagement, access to health and wellness, serving over 2,700 annually, and decreasing absenteeism, to name a few. We know that this model works, we see it, we have the data, but we need your help. Although our work has demonstrated positive gains, this would not have been achieved without the support of coordination. Prior to myself coming on board, Brooklyn Center had one individual, our current director for community schools, for 6 years tackling this work alone. However, to accomplish this work effectively by responding to the building's specific needs as it relates to students, more coordination and support was identified as a need. I'm here today to attest to the need of financial support, as funding will support coordination as well as support other districts looking to scale up their efforts. Additionally, funding will support statewide technical assistance, which will allow efficient support for these already implementing this model. Your support for this model is greatly needed, as the full service community schools framework is effective, efficient, and supports all young people, families, teachers, and our communities. We hope that you take the opportunity to see our work in Brooklyn Center, as well as our friends in Duluth, St. Paul, and Rochester. You will not be disappointed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Auld. And
yes, thank you, Madam Chair, author, Representative Dabney, and Representative Murphy, who has championed previous legislation, as well as co-authored this bill. My name is Matthew Heshen. I'm currently a member of the Board of Directors for the Myers-Wilkins Community School Collaborative. I'm also a parent of kids who go to Duluth Public Schools, and I care about my community. And so in 1999, we started a collaborative initially just at our elementary school, and it involved getting parents together along with community members, teachers, and our school principals organized to find solutions to some of our problems, which included high rates of student absenteeism, behavioral issues, and low academic achievement. Through organized community input sessions and research into effective strategies to turn our school around, we developed a full-service community school model informed by the work of the Institute for Educational Leadership. In a full-service community school, youth, families, and community residents work as equal partners with the school and other community institutions to develop programs and services that address the local needs of the community. Parents from Myers-Wilkins began asking us for continued support beyond elementary school. As their students and kids were going from elementary to middle to high school, they wanted continued support of a community school model. And so it was the parents that came to us as a nonprofit board asking for this graduation pipeline from kindergarten and on to high school. And their ask resulted in us continuing to seek funding for this support, which we have done and have received. And so just real quickly, we have a site coordinator at Myers-Wilkins now, as well as Lincoln Park Middle School. Both principals were unable to attend today, but would like to pass along the message that they feel that these positions are critical to their school, to their families, and to the community. And so the two site coordinators we have now have begun working, and we have already been at this for about 17 years at Myers-Wilkins, and have continued on with our work at Lincoln Park, and have also received funding to do implementation at the high school level in Duluth. So with this funding, our goal is to provide those services for our students all the way through high school and graduation to deal with some of that achievement issue. And so we really certainly support you all, and thank you for your support in this endeavor.
from my perspective, I'm coming as a nonprofit person and as a parent, and part of the solutions for all of us is all of us being at the table and working with our communities and having active citizenry, which is what is a goal for all of us. And so this really does provide that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Ms. Ponciano had to leave, but Ms. Howe is here, as is Ms. Mark.
All right, welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you, Representative Dabney. My name is Heidi Howe. I'm the associate principal at Riverside Central Elementary in Rochester, and Rochester Public Schools has 3 full-service community schools as of this year. And really, we just wanted to share some of the journey and the stories of success that we've already seen. There's many positive impacts that happen. It's really just good business and doing this, using this strategy, because what we're doing is we're taking and efficiently combining all the people that are in the community and all of the kids and all of the families and creating this hub, which is the school, to be the place where we can move our kids to that next level. And it really looks at the whole child. It takes into account after school hours, during the school day. It takes into account things that we've talked about already today, mental health issues. It combines the community support, the county support. We have many partners, Mayo Clinics, Sports Mentorship Academy, PACE, Equity Specialist, Girl Scouts, United Way. We do immunization, dental health. We're building a garden. We have Kiwanis that is a part of our building. And what it's done, a couple things. Behavior-wise, we've decreased, if you are aware of PBIS, we use the PBIS system in our school. And we've decreased by over 50%. Closer to like the 60-65% of our referrals this year. We've really talked a lot about restorative circles, cultural equity, cultural linguistics, and really speaking about conversation so that kids can have value in the school culture, as well as speak biculturally and have value in their home culture. And if we can take and create this atmosphere that we're a community and it's okay to be different in the different locations, but we all are going to respect and work together to get to the common goal in a school is learning. We've created loyalty for our school. We've added the arts, lots of music. Our attendance daily average rate has increased by 10% so far this year. Families are coming in for lunch, for breakfast, for family nights. It really becomes a positive place. And for some, the school wasn't always a positive place to be. So this community school strategy helps to align, and fiscally it is responsible because we're all doing the same thing and going in the same direction versus the support is at home on this, or maybe on the weekend here and so forth. So the last piece that we're trying to add is home visits to build relationships in the home and at school. We've added transportation by using a school vehicle and getting kids to school when that transportation is a barrier. So creating the opportunities, eliminating barriers, and really becoming a community. So thank you for letting us tell our stories and really think about this bill. I think it's a fabulous bill. Your support for reimaging our schools is essential, and I think the strategy of community schools is really the way to go.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Marquardt.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the committee members. And thank you to Representative Dabney for offering the bill. It's a pleasure to be with you today. My name is Jessica Marquardt, and I am the community school site facilitator for Gage Elementary in Rochester. Gage Elementary School just completed our first full year of community school implementation, thanks to funding from the first round of appropriations for community schools. We began implementation last spring with a comprehensive needs assessment of our family, staff, students, and community partners. In response to identifying needs from that assessment, we've made some changes to provide structure and accountability for our community school efforts, something that is common across community school sites but looks unique depending on the needs of each. Our building-wide committees were restructured to align with the 8 components of full service of community schools and address the needs identified in our needs assessment. Each of these teams includes representatives of our staff, families, and community partners who align to the particular area, and includes a facilitator that meets with me as the site facilitator each month between the team's monthly meetings to ensure that our work alignment is aligned, is they're being held accountable,
and that we have a clearer understanding of the efforts that are happening throughout our building and throughout the community to support our students and families. In addition, our community school leadership team includes a representative from each of those committees within its makeup of 5 staff, 5 community partners, and 5 family members. This team meets monthly to review overall building goals and progress within our community school improvement plan, which they drafted. They look big picture at our community school efforts and provide direction back to the committees to ensure that we all continue progress toward full implementation of the community school strategy and success for all students. Our efforts have required the participation and valued input from all of our stakeholders at each step of the process. Collaboration that is showing positive results for students, increased family engagement, and a stronger community buy-in. Your support for this strategy will allow us to continue efforts to best leverage resources from throughout our community to change the odds for our students and ensure success for all.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is that any other testifiers?
I have no other testifiers.
All right. Thank you, Representative Dabney, and thank you to all of you. Just a quick question. I'm recalling the money for grants to full-service community schools, but I don't remember how it was distributed to the schools. Was it a grant process and the MDE selected school sites? And was it an equitable, I mean, every school got the same amount, or was it dependent on pupil counts or things like that?
Sure. Thank you, Ms. Chair, I can speak to that. We each had to apply through MDE separate grants for the individual needs of those individual schools or those sites. And so the dollar amounts, typically how it was divided up, was seeing that that site coordinator position was kind of the key role, and that was the position that was the thing that would fund the most amount of efficiency and kind of making this work. So we each individually submitted separate grants, and then were awarded those based on their selection process.
All right. Thank you. Representative Scott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how many of these schools do we have in the state of Minnesota? And through that grant process, is everyone that applies gets a piece of the pie, or is it run out before everybody gets a piece?
Okay.
Mr. Horshin, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. There isn't enough money to go around. Ideally, the continued efforts in Faribault, they're also trying to move to the middle school and high school and continue to build those efforts. And so the dollar amount initially was requested was much more significant, and I believe it was awarded about $500,000, which was divided up, if I have that correct. And so that money was allowed to be able to get those site coordinators in position, and now there's a need for, you know, greater development and use of those dollars.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so how many schools like this are in the state of Minnesota?
Miss Marquardt. I'm sorry. I was going to call you Howe. I knew I got that wrong.
There are currently 14 sites that have been funded through the appropriations to support the community school efforts.
All right. Any other questions from committee members? All right. Seeing none, Representative Dabney, final comments.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just drive home the point on the success of this model. Green Central School in the Minneapolis School District has a strong principal, and so one of his initiatives is a full-service community school. What they have seen there is an 11% increase in the number of students attending 95% of the school days or more. We know that that is a critical measure and a measure that we use in state law. Their participation in after-school programming, which is both academic opportunities as well as social opportunities, which are both important, has increased 37% since the 2014-15 school year. And maybe most importantly for this sort of school, it's stabilized the school population. 2013-14 school year, 27% of the students turned over. So a quarter of the kids left to a different building. 2015-16 school year, the most recent data we have, 13%. That means those kids are in that building consistently attending and coming back the next year at a much higher rate, which is good for that kid, but it's good for the whole classroom and the whole school of kids. Madam Chair and members, we often talk about the school as the center of the community. I hear my greater Minnesota colleagues often talk about that. It's no different experience in Minneapolis, or I'm sure St. Paul and Anoka and the other metro school districts. This really does that. It moves that center of the community from that identity and social network and the like to a resource hub where I, as a parent, can go and access private and public resources that my child and my family needs to thrive. I think it's a positive model, and I ask for member support as the process moves along here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Devaney. Thank you very much to the testifiers, and I apologize for any inconvenience of having you extend your afternoon, but we're glad you could be here. So with that, Representative Devaney, I think, did he renew his motion? Renews his motion that House Bill 146 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and you know the rest. So thank you very much. So now we will go to House Bill 1825 on the Perpich Center for the Arts. I'm going to ask Representative Scott to take the chair, and Representative Erickson is going to join me because she's also sponsoring an identical legislation.
I see you left me a cupcake, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Well, you should enjoy it, Representative Scott. Thank you.
I'm only teasing. Okay. Madam Chair, would you like to move your bill?
I will. I would move that House Bill 1825 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time.
Okay. And is there an amendment?
No.
Oh,
I think
that's later.
I think another member may be wishing to offer that amendment.
Very fine. Madam Chair, to your bill, if you want to explain it to us.
Thank you. And I would also like to thank Representative Erickson, and we're actually co-presenting today because, again, she has an identical bill that was introduced, and this has really been a joint effort working on this. So, I know we maybe have a number of testifiers, and we'd like to hear from the legislative auditor, and we've extended their day by having to go a little later today, too. So I'll just offer a couple of brief comments. One is that the bill as proposed would abolish the agency, and the Perpich Center for the Arts Education is an agency. I know a lot of people, when they think of it, they think only of the school, but this is a standalone state agency. It is under the sole control and operation of an appointed board, all appointed by the governor. And, it's come under some significant scrutiny, the operations of the board and the censure by the legislative auditor. And we'll hear some of the details or a recap of that report. And we've heard this before in this committee. We've had a previous hearing this session about that report and that audit information. I think what's most troubling to me as we look at this issue, and I, again, come to this as someone who is a great supporter of the arts. It's something that we value in our family. My children are very involved in it. My husband and I are patrons of the arts frequently. That is what we do in our free time here in the city's area. But we've got a situation where there's a state agency that has a long track record of having audit reports that where processes and procedures are not being followed. There's a number of concerns, and these red flags have shown up year after year. That's the one consideration. The other is that wrapped into this is the operation of two schools. We have the Arts High School, which is operated, again, by the board and at the site there in Golden Valley. But a couple of years ago, another school was transferred to the control of Purpich, the Crosswind School. And in both of these educational institutions, we have significantly declining enrollment, a number of parent concerns about the operation of the schools, of public information, of access of parents to information. It has just not been a good situation and not what we would expect, and certainly not what we would see with the operation of other schools and districts across our state. And so those are three very important situations all wrapped into this one occurrence, if you will, or topic before us. So, again, it provides me no pleasure whatsoever to be proposing eliminating this agency. It is one of four scenarios proposed by the legislative auditor in terms of what could happen or maybe what we would want to consider in light of the very disturbing information in the report. And it's, again, one where I think we need to give serious consideration to. I'm sure there will be other suggestions. And, again, I've always indicated that I'm more than willing to listen to other suggestions or proposals about where we go from here. But regardless of what we do with the schools involved and the education of our children, I do feel very strongly personally that continuing Purpich as a state agency as it is structured doesn't work. I'd asked staff to get additional research for me, and, again, we all have the audit report most recently that was provided. But if you go back, that was issued in January. I've got a report, an audit from July 1st, 2003 through June 30th, 2011. Many of the same problems. 2003 through 2007, many of the same problems. July 1st, 1997 through June 30th, 2000, many of the same problems. I mean, a lot of this is not new, and there are things that have been pointed out and just not corrected. So I think we have a structure that, again, is not, the purpose is not well defined enough in statute. The operation is not one where the controls are adequate for operation of the responsibilities of Purpich, not only education of high school age children, 11th and 12th grade, but also outreach for the arts and for educators across our state, which was a key component when the legislation was authorized back in the 80s. In fact, if you read the report, it seems very clear that this legislation would not have passed, Purpich would not have been created without that emphasis on the outreach. And that is one of the things that has really diminished over the years in terms of how the functions that Purpich was focused on. So with that, I would invite Representative Erickson to offer any comments, and then I think if we could turn to the legislative auditor after that.
Thanks. Chair Erickson. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Loon. Purpich first came to my attention back in 2000. I made a visit to the school because of parental concerns. Did visit with the executive director at length. Was promised that the issues that were at hand would be remedied. Representative Alice Segrin and I, former Representative Alice Segrin, who chaired this committee, in 2002 also visited because we had concerns just 2 years later. And as you heard Representative Loon note, that there were some audits that were done during this time period. Also in 2006, concerns came to me, and in 2010 as well. And I talked to former MDE employees yesterday who reminded me that Governor Pawlenty felt very strongly about converting this to a charter school because of the incessant reports of issues that were occurring at the school. It is a residential school, as you know, and what I heard from parents was, very disappointing to me, and I know it was to former Governor Pawlenty as well, that drugs and alcohol were an issue. The neighborhood was concerned. The fact that this is co-ed housing was a concern. So education seemed to become a second goal rather than the first goal, which probably was focusing more on the social life of some of the students. And as we know today, this is primarily a Metro Girls School and not serving all eight congressional districts that was designed to do. So I think we have a lot to be pondering, members, when we think about this agency that for 30 years has functioned, but not functioned in such a way that we expect as an agency. To have a board that's not engaged and doesn't even know it's an agency, you will notice that's found in the report. So I think it's very important that we listen to Mr. Alter, deliver some of the detail, and then proceed with this proposal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Erickson. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Alter. Good afternoon. Just introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Joel Alter. I'm an evaluation coordinator with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I was also the manager of the evaluation portion of the review of which we recently concluded. As both members noted, we also did a financial audit of the Perpich Center that was issued in January. I want to begin by just noting that our office does not have an official position on this bill, but as members have noted, we did walk through in the final chapter of this report, after going through some of the issues that we saw, we laid out options for the legislature to consider. And we did that by also laying out kind of the three functions of this agency. As has been noted, there are two schools that are operated, the Perpich Arts High School and Crosswinds, and there is a responsibility for statewide arts education outreach. We discussed a range of scenarios, ranging from essentially keeping those functions intact but making improvements within the agency to the option of abolishing the entire agency. And I'm going to be very brief. I'll just hit on a few highlights that I know this committee has already heard. We found that there was dysfunction in the governing board. We found problems with the agency's top administrative leadership and that had contributed to morale problems among the employees. The agency's outreach efforts were doing some good things, but we said that they had limited impact and there was a need to clarify the purpose of that outreach. We noted that the two schools had had declining enrollment in recent years, and along with that, the cost per student had grown. One of those schools, Crosswinds, also had significant problems with its test scores across multiple grades, had a lot of staff turnover, and that school was eating up a lot of the resources of the agency that had been appropriated to Perpich for other purposes. And then our financial audit found some serious weaknesses. The audit said that the Perpich Center did not have adequate internal controls. It did not always comply with legal requirements. Kind of in the realm of our financial audits, our conclusions were pretty much at one end of the continuum in terms of the language we use to describe the seriousness of the problems. And again, regarding Crosswind School, we concluded that there were serious doubts whether that school, at least under Perpich leadership, could continue to be financially viable. And in the last few weeks, the Perpich board has agreed. The board passed a resolution that supported the conveyance of Crosswinds to the St. Paul school system. I should also mention, and we've noted this before, there have been some important changes at Perpich in the last few months. The agency's longtime executive director departed in January, and the agency is in the process of hiring a permanent executive director. The board has a lot of new members in the last few months, and in February they elected new officers. And I should say that board has embraced the findings of our financial audit and our program evaluation. So what you have here is really kind of two sides of a coin. You have on the one hand an organization that clearly has had significant problems that we discuss at length. And on the other hand, you have an organization with fresh leadership that's still evolving. And so I can't tell you where exactly to go with this agency, but I do think you have to give serious consideration to the problems that we cite in this report, while at the same time considering there are some talented people at this organization, good teachers, good arts educators, and a lot of students, and they certainly are interested in the path that you choose for this agency for the future.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. Chair Loon, where would you like to go from here?
Well, why don't we, I think if members have questions for me or specifically also the legislative auditor in the interest of time, and then maybe I think there are those with either concerns on the bill or want to share other points of view.
All right.
Maybe do that afterwards.
All right. Member questions. Representative Peterson, you are first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here today and testifying. And I was just curious, does the OLA traditionally recommend closure of an agency?
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I would say that's unusual. And again, in this case, we laid it out as an option that we thought should be on the table. We didn't make a recommendation for closure. And that's why in the last chapter, we kind of walked through the pros and the cons. And we say in the report, the clearest argument is for doing something with Crosswinds, but in terms of the recommendation to or the option of closing the school, we think the problems are serious, and that's within the realm of possibility here.
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I just going through this report, I mean, one board member told us he was on the board for a year before he realized that the Purpich Center operated Crosswinds School. Another board member was unaware at the time that we talked to him that the Purpich Center was a state agency. I mean, these are kind of basic things. And then moving on, you know, there's been no assessment by the governance at all. And if it was just sort of a one-time problem, I guess it'd be one thing, but this is 1997, 2003, 2007, 2011, 2016. I mean, that's very disturbing to me. I mean, I just started hearing about some of the parent complaints when I was elected 2 years ago and was wondering what was going on. And when you don't have any strategic, your board adopts no strategic goals, they don't do any assessment of the executive director, and they don't oversee any kind of, have really no oversight of student achievement. And then, you know, another piece was they're not following the same rules that we hold all of our other schools accountable. So, you know, this maybe some of these reasons happen because they're not following what our other school districts are doing. One other piece in here, we observed that the board's review of the most recent budget was superficial. As at a June 2016 meeting, the board took less than 10 minutes to discuss and approve the entire agency budget, including budgets for the agency schools. I mean, members, this is a lot deeper than providing wonderful arts for our kids. I mean, I think that we all value the arts and we all value our kids' education. But the typical governance structure in this is flawed, and I think that's one of the reasons you may have suggested it as an option. Thank you.
Representative Sandstead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
First one is to the auditor or to your office. Did I hear you correctly in saying that your recommendation for closure was for Crosswinds?
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, Representative Sandstead, again, what we did is we laid out some options and four options. We said that the clearest area in which there needed to be action was Crosswinds because that did not seem to us to be financially sustainable going forward unless there were major changes. Having said that, we did say that other options were certainly ones that could be on the table, and we kind of walked through the pros and cons of those.
Representative Sandstead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, a question for Representative Peterson. The report that you just shared, talking about the meeting where they took 10 minutes to approve their budget, what meeting was that?
Representative Peterson? We don't usually ask member questions across the way, but...
Madam Chair and Representative Sandstead, it's on page 21 of the report that we received in this report.
Do you have a date on that?
June 2016.
Madam, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question for that, or my reason for asking that, is because there was already indication at that time that they were going to be changing the board. And I don't know how much time I would honestly put in on approving a budget if I knew I was being removed. There was already a plan in place to change a board which has happened. So I don't know that that's always indicative of how the board has practiced.
I don't know if you want to respond to that, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I was on school board for 8 years, and I can tell you that I operated as a school board member up until the very last day, even though I was moving on to other things afterwards. But you're a board member. You have those responsibilities every day.
I would just say, too, if I knew I was under as much, if I had just gotten the report that they had gotten, I would really try to do more due diligence and try to kind of spiff things up a little bit. But Representative Mariani, or Representative Sandstead, were you done? I'm sorry, you had the
floor. Thank you, Madam Chair. As I've talked about this before, and some of you have heard me talk about the Purpose Center, there were lots of options, and again, coming from the world of education, when there's some kind of correction that needs to take place, there's usually a process, and that's including identifying the problems, giving the resources to fix the problems, a timeline within which to fix those problems, and then the consequences of what will happen at the end should those actions not be taken or not met. And as I look through all of the report, pieces of this have happened, but not all of it. In a linear, clearly defined, you've got to accomplish this by this time, and we'll give you the resources, or we'll give you a fair crack at least at getting there. And so, as an arts teacher who has talked about the invaluable resource Purpose has been in professional development for me personally, for the thousands and thousands of students that I've worked with who have benefited from what they've given me, I think this is just, without a doubt, there's concerns here, but I don't think we have done right by Purpose Center by shutting the doors now. There's clearly large issues financially with the Crosswinds piece. I think we need to remove that. And then we have a new board in place. Some of these people haven't even been on the board for a total of 3 months. It's early. I think it's very premature to shut the doors now when things seem to be turning around and the report has given other options. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions for Mr. Alter. Excuse me. And as usual, our legislative auditors do excellent work. I've been here for a number of years and have been powerfully guided by the information that your office has produced over the years. I do think, very quickly, Madam Chair, I think that having a discussion about closing Purpose is not out of bounds. For this legislative body, I don't support that, but I don't think it's out of bounds for us to be exploring that. And I think the question of who is exercising due diligence is an appropriate question. And to Representative Sanson's point, we have a whole different who at the table. Nonetheless, I'm just curious, Mr. Alter, and maybe you don't know, but in the legislative auditor's history of doing these kind of reviews of state agencies, is there a framework, are there standards that we as a legislator, legislature, the executive branch should be looking at specifically, not just in terms of whether or not agencies work well or not. I mean, surprise, surprise, we've had lots of agencies that haven't worked well over the years. The councils of color, until pretty recently, were a bit of a mess. They're not now. I think they're quite effective. And they have been quite a mess for quite a while. But what I'm looking for is your observations about what kind of things we should be, as we have this conversation, we should be filtering at the highest level of standards in terms of making this kind of a big decision of shutting down a state agency.
Mr. Alter?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, there is obviously no clear-cut formula for this. I think that you have to look at, in statute, the mission of this organization and whether that is a mission that's important to continue. And if it is it important to continue through this agency, or is it possible to do it in some other way? And those are not easy calls. And frankly, that's why we, as we contemplate those kinds of things, we frankly defer to the legislature often when it comes to this kind of a big policy question. We can tell you, as we have in this report, some areas in which maybe the law is being violated, where proper management practices aren't being followed, and we can kind of add that up to a larger picture. But ultimately, I think you have to make some judgment about whether or not this agency is the best way to accomplish that mission, and whether or not there's a need to clarify that mission in any way. And I would add that in this case, the PERPICH board, the board of directors, is the entity that the legislature has established in statute to provide the overall direction for this agency and make key decisions. And I think you have to ask yourself, in looking at this as an agency with a governing board, whether or not the current governing board has a plan for going forward, and whether it's capable of fixing the problems. Those are a couple of starting points.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to catch up on my notes. You put a lot of good stuff out there for us. As the legislative auditor was conducting its report, was it conducting its report for the purpose of helping us to answer that question, or was it conducting the report for the purpose of just pointing out what's working and what's not working programmatically, financially at this entity?
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I'm not sure that when we started the evaluation that people were seriously questioning whether the agency should exist. But sometimes that's the natural course when you go through a process and you want to provide some recommendation and direction to the legislature. In terms of the financial audit, this was their schedule. It had been 4 years since they had a financial audit. This was a routine event. In terms of the evaluation, the Legislative Audit Commission specifically asked us to look at the PERPICH Center because there had been an accumulation of concerns that had come to legislators' attention. And so there may not have been a specific directive for us to look at, well, should it be kept open or not? But as we began to see some of the problems that existed, that was something that we clearly thought should be on the table.
Madam Chair, Mr. Alter, I think that's fair. It seems to me that spending some time with that question very much at the center of a deep dive, given the big investment that we've made in this institution for three decades that has served thousands of students and hundreds of communities across the state, ought to be the approach that we ought to be doing here today. I'm not asking you that question, obviously. And perhaps, you know, as a result of that, we come out to the same, ending where this bill proposes. But I am concerned that attempting to do this based on a report that was just issued within a couple of months ago, as important as it is, and quality of it, et cetera, in this short period of time is perhaps not the best approach. We have charter schools in this state, with all due respect, Representative Slocum, and I've been a supporter of charter schools from day one. But we've had charter schools that have performed horribly. I know. I chaired this committee when we had several of them. There are issues, laid out before us. We didn't give up on them. We adjusted our laws to be able to provide much more careful oversight and accountability, and a number of them have in fact shut down. A number of them have gone forward and have evolved. A number of them continue to struggle. I mentioned earlier the councils of color, which I do think meet an important function for our state. But quite frankly, from a number of managerial issues, not acceptable for us. They are now strong entities that are providing, I believe, a good service to our state, but we didn't jump overnight to deal with that issue either. It took a couple of years of some pretty harsh, and it wasn't partisan at all, battles and debates that we had to come out with a model that I think is helping and working here. So I just want to provide that kind of context. I do think that your report points out some pretty serious issues in terms of management and fiscal, particularly fiscal management, that should be of concern to us. I would be curious to find out whether or not we can come up with a different outcome relative to this bill, similar to what we did with our teacher licensure approach, another report that your office worked on. And we spent a whole year not just identifying what was going wrong with the Board of Teaching, but looking at some possible new models for us to pursue, of which Representative Erickson has structured, I think, a pretty good bill around. So I do want to thank you for that. I do have concerns, Madam Chair and Madam Chair, about this bill, but I do appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And I think kind of the difference between the charter school example and this is that this is an agency with almost a $22 million budget. And I was just doing some rough numbers, and Mr. Alter, I'm sure this, again, these are very rough because I just took the budget and divided it by how many students on the last count that I had in my information, but 187 students, that works out to $117,000 per student. So I'm sure that that's, not accurate, but if, do you have any idea what the cost per student would be with an enrollment of only 187 students?
Madam Chair, we've got a breakdown in the report, and I'll point you to the right page, but it's at the end of Chapter 1, page 12. And for the arts high school, and again, you have to keep in mind that there are the two schools, but there are other costs that are related to statewide outreach and to administrative costs. So when you look at the per student cost at each school for the last school year, not this school year, when enrollment is actually down a little bit more, but for 2015-16, the arts high school was at about $21,300 per student. Crosswinds was at about $18,200. Crosswinds has had a pretty substantial decline in enrollment in the last year.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up for me.
Mr. Can I just follow up on that specific point?
Yeah, sure. Representative Thiessen.
So do some students stay there? It's not just the day school?
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, at the Arts High School, there is a dorm, and I think there are 60 to 70 students at the dorm, so not all students. But.
Okay. Representative Thiessen.
And is that included in your $21,000, the cost
of? Oh, let's see. I've got somewhere I can pull those out. I think, Madam Chair, if we pull out those expenditures, if we pull out the dorm costs, it's about $19,600.
Thank you. Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to the testifier, so rough math, it's roughly $90,000 per student administrative costs?
19. Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, you said 90,000?
90.
Mr. Alter?
I have to make sure and think that through. We've got on page 11, is that right, the general administrative costs. And again, these are spread across students at both schools, but also the statewide outreach efforts. And there we show, as an agency, about $740,000 in cost, and we're talking about in the neighborhood of 300 students. But again, that doesn't capture all of the areas in which administration is covering costs.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, so I was working off the numbers of $117,000 per student if you use the top line number, the number of students enrolled. That's what Madam Chair stated just a short while ago. And if it's roughly $20,000 per student, that puts administrative costs at roughly $90,000 per student. Is that correct?
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, members, I don't think I would use the $117,000 per student. I'm not sure if that's a biennium cost and if that includes things other than the school cost, I'd rather, again, we can compute the general administrative cost if we take $740,000 and divide it by 300 and come up with, again, those administrative costs are covering more than just the schools, but that's how I think it would be better to look at it.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you. You keep saying 300 student enrollment. What was the enrollment in 2016?
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, members, the enrollment at the Arts High School was, I think, around 210, and I think at Crosswinds it was around 180 probably. So, and again, that's come down, but it was then between the two of them, it was well over 300 then.
All right. What I'd like to do next is call up Larae Mills and Mary Schaefel. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Alter. You might want to stick around in case we do have further questions. I appreciate it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
State your name for the record and your position, and go ahead.
My name is Larae Mills, and I'm a music educator and a business owner, and I'm one of the former Crosswinds parents who passionately pursued to reveal the issues in the audit in order to save Purpage and Crosswinds, the schools and agency that I believe in and love. I, along with many others, spent over a year organizing and strategizing how we could truly stop this deep-seated corruption to save Minnesota arts education. We did this for our children, the teachers, the staff, and for arts education. But now we sit here again needing to fight to save Purpage and Crosswinds. In this bill, closing Purpage will take away a valuable training resource for Minnesota arts teachers, and especially for teachers of greater Minnesota. It will put a collection of art resources into an inaccessible library. It will close a unique, life-changing art school available for all Minnesota high school students, and no, the low attendance is not reflective of too many arts high schools. Also, Crosswinds needs to move forward with this conveyance now to survive. Crosswinds was a lifesaver for my daughter and many of her friends. She needed a place that approached learning in a different way and incorporated the arts. She blossomed in her years at Crosswinds and is now thriving. Please allow these schools a better chance. Please give Purpage a chance to show change, growth, and restructure with the new leadership. Minnesota loves the arts, and Minnesota needs the arts. So please, I think you're going to be voting possibly on an amendment, so please vote yes on that amendment, and please remove the language of the bill that's currently at hand. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair Loon, Ms. Scott, and Member Scott, and members of the committee. I am Mary Schaefel, Executive Director of the Minnesota Music Educators Association. I work with the 3,000-plus school music educators in the state of Minnesota. We also collaborate with numerous arts education organizations in all other arts areas. Legislators have asked reasonable questions since the audit's release. I'm here to directly address questions that focus on the Purpage outreach services that serve all of Minnesota's schools. First, legislators have questioned whether the Purpage Center is still needed. According to 2010 data from the Minnesota Department of Education, 88% of school districts, representing 91% of the student population, indicated the need for Purpage technical support in at least one arts area. In fact, two-thirds of the districts stated they needed support in more than one art area. There is clearly a need. External evaluators compiled this report. I quote from the executive summary. As demand for these high-quality programs and services has increased, the agency's funding to support these outreach initiatives has decreased. After the report's findings, and for unknown reasons, then Perpich leadership chose to reduce the budget, serving greater Minnesota further. Second, your colleagues asked whether Perpich Center is serving greater Minnesota. I've shared with, I provided to the committee administrator, I'm not sure whether it was provided to you, and I can also email this. Information prepared by Perpich leadership about outreach during the 2013-14, 2014-15 biennium. 237 schools were served. You'll be able to see in the map that, yes, there are areas of northern Minnesota and central Minnesota that were not served. It's true that the cuts to the capacity of Perpich Center had been reduced a number of times before 2013. After this map that you will see, then Perpich leadership made additional changes that decreased the agency's ability to serve all of Minnesota again. Third, some of your colleagues have suggested that Arts Magnet schools now meet Minnesota's needs. I spoke with arts educators in several of those schools recently. Their administrators approve professional learning only when it meets building goals, such as math and reading scores, attendance graduation rates. Arts educators can and do support those building goals. But we all know that you need the right tool for the right job. The path to reaching building goals and meeting educators' needs differs between tech ed, civics, health and physical education, and the arts. Content-specific professional development is critical. Fourth, I've heard questioning of the Perpich Center business model. I am here to tell you the model delivers when it is functioning and well managed. Our organization, my personal experience with Perpich goes back to 2004 when I took the executive director position. I can tell you that in the past, prior to 2011 that I showed that for the report, this lengthy report, prior to 2013-14, Perpich Center would serve 600 to 750 music educators in one weekend. Those teachers served hundreds of schools. Then they served thousands of students. I can tell you that the model works. I've shared data about I've shared data about the needs of schools as through MDE and teachers' needs. The agency is one that has suffered management lapses that are significant. It is not a faulty business model. You'll hear coming up, at least I have heard, the commitment of the new Perpich leadership to change. Fifth, this bill, 1852, creates a single position within the Minnesota Department of Education to serve five arts academic areas and almost 20 licensure assignments across the entire state of Minnesota. This one person is provided to do all of the following: research, curriculum, instructional practices, assessment, materials, training and assistance, and more. With deep respect to this legislative process, I agree with Representative Mariani, and I would also agree with Mr. Alter's suggestion that looking at the mission of Perpich is critical. Looking at what they need to do, what's in, and then figuring out how to do that. What I can tell you is the bill, that it, as it is currently structured, does not meet the needs that are listed in the bill. It does not meet Minnesota schools, administrators, principals, or students' needs.
Ms. Schaefel, if you could...
Yes.
We've got some other...
And there's one final statement.
Sure. Thank you.
Please oppose House File 1852. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you. So in the auditor's report, it reads, some stakeholders, page 4, some stakeholders have expressed concern about the agency's limited outreach. For example, there are more music educators in Minnesota, and we're blessed to have one on this committee, than any other types of art teachers. But the Purpich Center has not had a music education outreach specialist for several years. Can you help me understand that?
Yes.
Ms. Schaefel.
Representative Loon and Smith. That fact was shared by myself and a number of other individuals with the legislative auditor's office. So the 237 schools that were served were with a single person in visual art. There was that was back in 2013-14 and 14-15. What I can tell you is that in the last 5 years, music has only been served for one. Is there clearly a need for more? Yes. And we said so. We shared that information with then Purpich leadership frequently. And that what I would say is that in addition, the current the recommendation to fund a single person would not meet the capacity or the requests from schools.
Representative Smith?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So on the Crosswinds website, it emphasizes that the school's focus is on arts. Would you agree with that statement?
Ms. Schaefel?
Thank you, Representative Loon and Smith. I don't work directly with the schools, and so I don't think it's appropriate for me to try to answer that question. I know that Crosswinds states that they support the arts, and I know that a number of other schools do as well.
And Representative Smith, we're going to have the principal and director up here shortly, so feel free to ask those questions of them at that time. But do you have further questions?
I'll withhold. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very quickly, a quick answer, Ms. Chaffel. So, seriously, we've heard some pretty serious, charges about the school. So I don't think anyone here should be, none of us should be pretending that that doesn't exist in terms of the Purpich operations. What is your association willing to do to step up to be a part of, assuming that Purpich, continues to operate? What is your community of folks willing to do to make sure that those things don't happen again? Obviously, you're not going to be on the board and those things, but I mean, in terms of assuring quality of service and at the school.
Ms. Schaefel?
Representative Loon and Mariani. In the past, Purpich has had a position on our board, and they've also had a position on other arts education boards. Those have sat vacant for at least 5 years. That was our primary way of collaborating. We're willing to collaborate and to visit with their newly formed Outreach Arts Education Committee as well, and do a number of other things. Our organization certainly doesn't have we don't have a view into their administrative or financial, some of the issues, and I would, I go through audits every year as well, and I know that those would be absolutely significant issues, but that's not an area that we could oversee. We would look at the quality of service and where the service is occurring.
Thank you. I'd like to call up Ahava Silky Jones and Benjamin Vandekor. So we have the principal and the acting director coming forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll have ladies first, if that's all right with you.
That's fine with me.
All right. Go ahead with your introduce yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Ahava Silky Jones, and I'm the principal for the Purpich Arts High School. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I came to Purpich in the fall because I'm confident with time and continued investment, it will fulfill its mission. I see no question that Purpich continues to have relevance and impact in the state of Minnesota. And in the last 2 weeks alone, I've received over 500 impact statements from stakeholders who have been shaped by Purpich over our 32-year history, as well as prospective families really concerned about the opportunity for their children to attend Purpich in the future. The school has taken seriously the findings outlined in the audit, implementing immediate oversight in relation to student absenteeism, testing procedures, and an agency-wide analysis of programming. As enrollment has decreased in recent years, the high school has retained full-time faculty in each art area in order to maintain the integrity of our programming. This has impacted greatly our per-pupil spending. Our outreach department has retained a full-time specialist only in the areas of visual media arts,
and a part-time specialist in theater. In light of the impact of the absence of these specialists, which you heard, the agency is making strategic decisions to increase staffing so that all art areas are represented, both in the high school and outreach moving forward. On both campuses, we have licensed school administrators. I am serving as a licensed administrator at the high school, and the assistant principal is the licensed administrator at Crosswinds. With regards to recruitment, we have yielded a 900% increase in student applications from Congressional District 7 this year, an area that was cited in the report. And we've received a talented, diverse applicant pool this year, with close to half of our applicants reporting a GPA of 3.5 or higher and an exceptional caliber of artistic work. Amidst very public criticism, families continue to seek out Purpich as the best opportunity for their children to receive a high-level, arts-infused education from around the state of Minnesota. The arts represent over a $2 billion footprint statewide, and the Purpich Center is a core, tangible commitment by the state of Minnesota to prioritize the implementation of best practices in arts education. The challenges we currently face have not rendered the institution obsolete, but rather invaluable. A comprehensive closure of Purpich would be a drastic decision with catastrophic impact. Purpich is more than a school or an outreach provider. Purpich is a dream and quite literally a lifesaver. The center has had an undeniable impact on tens of thousands of students and thousands of teachers over three decades and has the potential to do so much more. Purpich has struggled recently, but Purpich isn't lost. We have our team in place to fulfill the mission of serving students and teachers throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I just, before we go on to the next testifier, I had a really quick question. You said there was a 900% increase in District 7.
Yeah.
Pupils, is that inquiring or do you have?
Actual applicants.
Actual applicants. Yes. And so how many students does that translate to, that 900%?
So we had, we have nine students of our, which is comprised about 10% of our applicant pool are from District 7.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Mr. Vandercoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
I'm sorry.
First?
Do you want a question for me?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the principal. Was it Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell me how many outreach specialists you have?
Yes. So we currently have one. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative. We currently have one full-time specialist that does visual and media arts and one part-time specialist that does theater.
Representative Poston?
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm looking at this list of all the outreach schools that you touched. Can you give us an example? I'm just picking one on the top of the list, Rush City Schools. What would that outreach look like? What would have happened there? I don't understand the outreach piece, I guess, and I'm asking you to explain it.
Ms. Jones?
Madam Chair, Representative, as I work specifically with the high school and the high school students, I'm going to allow our board chair to speak more in depth about outreach and in particular the school that you mentioned, as I don't want to share information that I don't have in-depth knowledge of. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Vandercoy, go ahead.
Okay, Madam Chair, members, I've got a cold, so I'll try to keep going as long as I can. First, thank you for the opportunity to talk today. I want to tell you just quickly why I got involved in this. For my entire adult life, believe it or not, 40 years, I've been involved at the intersection of art and public policy. I've served two terms on the arts board. One of those terms, Fritz spent 2 years as the chair. I've been involved in arts and arts education, as I say, my whole adult life, even though it's as an avocation. I'm a city attorney by occupation. The point is this. I was asked last year in June to join the board at Purpich, first of all, to find out what was going on and then take corrective action. I came into this with no illusions. I wanted to find out what was going on. Fortunately for us, we had the auditor also doing the same thing, and so I've relied heavily on that report and the changes that we've made. What have we done so far, and what do we expect to do in the future? First of all, once we got the majority on the board, which happened on January 11 of this year, it was pretty clear to the executive director who was there before that she would not survive long. She retired. And frankly, we're glad she did. I think some of the management mistakes that were made were through her dereliction of duty. Also, the governor has not reappointed anyone. All of the board members are new. And frankly, they've been drawn from across the state major arts institutions who are committed to keeping the Purpich Center for the Arts alive. We didn't sign on for this thing to close the school. We signed on to fix the school. So what have we done beyond that? Well, the first thing we did is we met with the auditor. We had a wonderful conversation for about an hour. We went through the report, went through all the recommendations, and we've produced documents that will be we're going to use in the future to report to the legislature about in each one of the findings, who's responsible for that, and then who will be reporting to that and by what date. This happens to be the one for finances. There's also one in the process for program, and each one of the committees will be given this so they can work through this process to fix Purpich. So we are committed to doing that. But while that process is ongoing, it will take some time. For example, we're in the process of hiring a new executive director. The application deadline is this Friday. So far, we have 31 applications. 8 are fully licensed, either as a principal or a superintendent, which frankly is remarkable in this kind of climate that people would be interested in the Purpich Center for the Arts. But we're seeing a tremendous outpouring of people who would like to improve that place. In addition to getting that done, we read the report closely, as all of you have, and realized that Crosswinds was a major liability for us. We appointed a Crosswinds task force on February 9. By February 28, we passed a resolution as the board, which you have in front of you, asking the legislature, please, to transfer this asset to another school district. We only have had one proposal given to us from the St. Paul Public Schools. We think it's a great proposal. There may be others out there. But the point is, and I believe this firmly after looking at the evidence, we should not be in the business of operating middle school, a 610 school in the East Metro. It was a mistake to do it. And frankly, we believe that that is what has caused a lot of the problems at Purpich, because as the funding needs moved up at Crosswinds, there was less money available at Purpich. What happened? Staff was laid off in the outreach part, and frankly, we've been jeopardizing both institutions. So our request to you is to pass half of the bill that you have here, and that is to transfer Crosswinds as quickly as possible. The only change we would make, don't wait until January 1st of 2018. Do it by the end of this fiscal year, because we think the students deserve to have a new school year start and know who's going to be in charge. The St. Paul proposal that was made, they said if not all of the details can be worked out in the session, they'd be willing to operate this under a contract, much as Roseville did with the Harambe School when that was done. So again, we don't want to operate Crosswinds. We think that was a huge mistake. We think it's time to fix that mistake. Please don't delay doing that. Get that done as quickly as possible. But also give us a chance. Give us a chance to repair the damage that has been done through bad management and through ineffective board members. One last story, and then I'll complete. I heard the comment about the budget meeting. When I got on the board, my first meeting was in September, and I won't tell you all those war stories, but for 3 months, I asked when the Budget and Finance Committee was going to meet. Each time I was told, well, maybe next month. Finally, in November, I got a call because I was on that committee, and I said, what is going on? Well, we're going to review the appropriation that's going to go to the legislature. I showed up at the meeting. I spent 2 hours. I was the only one asking questions. 2 hours going line by line through that appropriation request. That is the level of dysfunction that was on this board. Frankly, we have people now trained who are experienced in operating nonprofits, and I don't think that's going to happen again. And I think if we build the right partnerships around town, we can keep this board functioning, keep Purpich alive. So, in conclusion, we need your help. We'd like you to close or transfer, more appropriately, Crosswinds as quickly as possible. We'd like it done by June 30, if you can make that happen. And then finally, give us a chance. Give us a year to implement this plan. We'll come back to you and report what our results have been.
Thank you.
I'm ready for questions.
All right, member questions. Representative Peterson.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I was just curious, I mean, is there anything that you're waiting for legislative approval to make that transfer on your own, you know, for the Crosswinds to the St. Paul Schools?
Mr. Vandeque?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe there will be an amendment that you'll be hearing from very soon that makes that very point. Yeah, but it is going to take legislative action. We can't do it on our own.
Okay,
that's what I was going to say. Thank you. Oh, Representative Smith, I was going to go to you next. I'll come back to you.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I might have two questions, one for each of you. It only seems fair. Let me start with the principal. What's the appropriate way to think about your budget? There's been a lot of numbers thrown around. I know when we talk about per pupil funding for traditional schools, we don't include the building costs, the buildings and grounds costs in the, you know, the numerator. So what's the appropriate way for us to think about your budget? Because I assume $107,000 a student is not the appropriate way to do that.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you very much for that question. So as you heard from the auditor, that the approximate for pupil cost, give or take the dorm, is around $20,000 for the Arts High School. Now, when the Arts High School was at full capacity, which is 310 students based on our statute, the per pupil was closer to approximately half of that, between $10,000 and $12,000, which is still a little higher than the average school, but because of the cost of arts education and materials, that cost has always traditionally been a little higher, even when Purpich was fully enrolled. And so what's happened in the last few years, as your enrollment has declined in almost half, the number of staff and the number of arts areas and academic areas have continued to stay represented at the same level. And so we our per pupil has skyrocketed because the curriculum and the program offerings has stayed intact with the intention of this enrollment dip coming back up. And we've recently brought on a new admissions coordinator in November that is doing phenomenal work to get out the word about Purpich, and we're seeing that in our applicant pool even this year, although we know it'll take a little bit more time to kind of get the word out back to Greater Minnesota. Does that answer your question?
Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, is it Ms. Smith?
Smith Jones.
My apologies. I think that's maybe that's it. That's very helpful, particularly the information that when the school was at full capacity, the cost per student was much, much different. I think that's helpful for us to think about if you're able, or if the board and a new director are able to stabilize the school, I imagine that would assist in student recruitment. Let me ask, I think, is it Vander Coy? Coy. You ain't much if you ain't Dutch, is what I was always told. two questions. Let me start with, there's been speculation, perhaps even in the OLA report, about a strategic value to expanding the school to be 912. That it's a bit of an odd duck at an 11-12 school. Can you speak to any conversations the board may have had, or even your own bias on that question?
Madam Chair, Representative, we haven't gone there. I mean, we're trying to save the school at this point. But we have a strategic planning process that will start after the executive director is chosen. That will be one of the questions on the table, because we want to take a look at what's happening nationally and what other states are doing. Frankly, Purpich has become a model for other states, but they've taken it in other directions. So we think it's time to get up to speed, and it may be that 912 is a model we'll have to go with, or it might be advisable. Frankly, though, we may need bigger place for students than we have right now.
Members, we have a couple other people that want to testify, so I'm going to ask members to keep their questions short. Representative Dabney, were you finished?
One last question.
Please make it brief.
Mr. Vander Coy, I hear the urgency around transferring Crosswinds to St. Paul. My speculation would be if we delay that, the student population at Crosswinds will continue to decline because parents will not be willing to put their children into a void. Is my speculation correct? Is there information from Crosswinds that would either substantiate or whatever the opposite, deny, prove me wrong yet again on that?
Mr. Vander Coy.
Madam Chair, Representative, I can tell you that I personally chaired a community meeting at Crosswinds on the 23rd of February, and there was a lot of consternation among parents, the charter school that's renting space there, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of nervousness. And about halfway through that hour-and-a-half meeting, the presentation came from the St. Paul Public Schools, and there was this, there was relief in the room, thinking that there was a future for Crosswinds, and it would be an arts integration model. So I think that they'll stick with the school if they know that positive changes keep getting made. I don't think we'll see enrollment fall much further, but here's our problem. This is draining the agency to the tune of at least $600,000 a year because we've had to divert money, staff, just in special education funds alone. It's a huge special education population over there. We don't have a way to having an operating referendum or a bonding bill or anything like that. So, frankly, the money has been diverted from Perpich over to Crosswinds. That will continue $600,000 a year until that's changed.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Vandekoy, thank you for being here. Some of these questions predate you, and I understand you're just, you know, trying to keep it together and trying to keep this school going forward. So knowing that you're not responsible for some of these, I'm a little bit confused. So the Crosswinds website emphasizes that the school's focus is on arts. That's the genesis of the school. Is that fair to say?
Mr. Vandekoy?
Madam Chair, Representative, you're right. I was not here when 3 years ago this all happened. But it's my understanding from touring the school, talking to teachers, that arts is a major part of the curriculum in that school. And in addition to the students, there's a teacher development program that's been going on that is specifically in that area, trying to train teachers of color. So, yes, arts is a part of it, not to the extent of the Arts High School, but it is a part of the curriculum.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you. Is it true that there's one music teacher and one visual art teacher at Crosswinds?
Mr. Vandekoy.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know that level of detail. I just don't.
Okay.
Representative Smith?
I believe that was in the report today. There, you know, the report that was, and it seems to run contrary to the core function of the school. So to, you know, your request for supporting Representative Thiessen's amendment, that point would go in line with that. In regard to the school's theater program, in 2015-2016 it was discontinued, there's one music teacher employed there. It's just one music teacher. Is that correct?
Mr. Vandekoy?
Madam Chair, Representative, are you talking about the Arts High School or Crosswinds?
Crosswinds.
I really don't know. We could defer that maybe to the principal at Perpich. You might know.
Ms. Silky Jones.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative. I can't speak specifically to the staffing at Crosswinds, but I can speak to the model in the sense that Crosswinds promotes arts-integrated learning in the classroom, so they utilize the arts in addition to having separate arts classes, but using the arts to teach science, using the arts to teach social studies, using the arts to teach English. And so although you may not see as high a representation in individual arts teachers, it's an arts-infused curriculum. And so that's where the focus on the arts kind of plays out at Crosswinds, if that helps in the understanding of it.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mrs. Jones, and thank you also for being here and trying to help us explain, you know, what happened, that all these issues predated you. I fully understand that. But the Perpich Center used to employ specialists in each area of the arts, and in 2016 it employed only one visual arts and one media arts specialist and one part-time theater specialist.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Go ahead.
Mrs. Jones, would that model continue if your school continued to operate? Is that the correct modeling for a school focused on art?
Ms. Silky Jones?
Madam Chair, Representative, so the Perpich Arts High School kind of functions in partnership with outreach, but separately. So the Perpich Arts High School has instructors, full-time instructors in every art area. The outreach portion of the agency right now has the representatives or specialists that you mentioned, and the intention would be, given some more time and a restructuring of resources, that we would re-implement specialists in all art areas. As we heard from the Music Association earlier, there's a high demand for a specialist in music as well as the other art areas, and that's a part of the mission of the agency. So the intention would be to increase the number of specialists on staff and for there to be at least one specialist in every art area.
Final question, Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, yes, with my final question. Thank you. In 2016, the MCA math test was administered to your school. Are you familiar with the results of that test as well as the state average?
Silke Smith.
Jones.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative, I hope it's a memorable name. so at the MCA, it's my understanding that the MCAs at the Purvidge Arts High School, traditionally about half the students participate or have participated in the MCAs. They do have the option to opt out. In 2016, only 18% of the student body participated in the MCAs. And so the scores that are reflected on behalf of the Arts High School only represent 18% of our population. And so they are well below the state average. And one of the pushes that we've been doing internally with our parent association, as well as just communicating to students how important it is for us as a school to have everyone take it, and so we can get an accurate benchmark of where our students are at. As they come to us as juniors, you know, we don't have a lot of impacts on kind of what their math experience was prior to attending Purvidge, but we at least want to be able to get a benchmark of where they're at when they're with us.
Madam Chair, a brief follow-up.
Yes.
What was the percent of proficiency, Ms.
Scott? You know, I'd have to refer to the audit report. I don't remember offhand, but I know that it was not, Madam Chair, Representative, I know that it was not reflective of what we hope to be representative of our students, and that it was below the state average. I also understand, just from the historical knowledge of speaking with my counselor, that many students that were preparing for AP exams around that time opted not to take the MCAs, and so our highest achieving students were not represented in those test scores.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Members, we're going to go on. We have two final testifiers. We have John Thien, Superintendent St. Paul Public Schools, and Chad Schmidt. And we're going to try to keep that testimony very brief. And we still do have an amendment to get through, and we'd hope to be out of here by 5. That's going to be probably not happening. Good morning, or good afternoon. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is John Thien. I'm Superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools. And I just wanted to mention, I know that we've been brought up a number of times today in the testimony, and what I would be willing to do is to be very excited to work with the authors of the bill to serve the students, and that's the most important thing with Roseville and I, or with St. Paul Public Schools, and I would yield my time to the next testifier so that the committee could get on to its work.
Well, you are too kind, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't go away, though. We may have questions. All right. Very good. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee, my name is Chad Schmidt, and I'm the union president that represents both schools, Crosswinds and Purvidge Center for Arts Education. And that's called, it's called SRSEA, State Residential Schools Education Association. I've been around for quite a few years. I've been the president for, I think, almost 13 years, and I've seen kind of the evolution of where Purvidge was to where we are now. I was actually one of the people that was at this table last year saying, hey, we've got some problems, we need some help. We were saying, you know, we want this board removed, we want this executive director removed. And I just kind of want to bring you up to speed on where we're at. We do have two different situations, and you've heard them clearly, and I can't speak any more eloquently than the last couple people you've heard. They are right on the money. What's going on at Crosswinds? We need the conveyance, and we need it as soon as possible. We have a lot of really good teachers out there that are now finally getting a grasp on where this place is going, what the vision and mission looks like, and they see a great opportunity in St. Paul schools. And so I'm going to say with, you know, all my heart, these people will do a good job, you know, working for St. Paul schools. To be honest with you, we didn't see it coming that we wanted the audit. We wanted, you know, we wanted this information to come out. We wanted you to see it. And guess what? It didn't surprise me at all or any of us at all. We knew it was coming, that it was going to have these 12 categories and the program audit. We knew it wasn't being served right, but we needed people to know. And so with that being said, what we want is we want your support. There's a lot of great opportunity within Purvidge. It just needs to be run right. The people that you've had here speak before me, these are outstanding leaders and have outstanding vision and mission. A year ago, I wouldn't have stood here and said I support this administration or this board. I stand here today or sit here today saying I fully support this board. I fully support this administration. These people have a lot going on. They're communicating with staff, and they believe in professionalism. You've got a great staff. at Purpich Center for Arts Education. There's a lot of veteran staff. They do a lot of great things. If you want to see greatness in Minnesota, I challenge you to walk down the halls of Purpich. It's amazing. It's exemplary arts. And to lose this resource would be tragic. With that being said, I have nothing further to say.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you.
We have one quick testifier. I believe the mayor of Golden Valley is here, so we will accommodate his.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate it. Members, my name is Chef Harris. I'm mayor of Golden Valley. I just briefly wanted to the message I wanted to convey on behalf of the City Council. We had a meeting last night, and actually this was an item that we briefly discussed, was just don't forget the City of Golden Valley in this. I can't speak for Mayor Giuliani Stevens with Woodbury, but I'm sure she would probably say don't forget Woodbury as well in this conversation. As it turns out, I actually want to thank the chief authors on this bill, because I learned because of this bill, we actually have some use agreements with the state in accessing the property in Golden Valley for recreational purposes and actually some storm sewer and pond management issues. So I would just say whatever you do decide to do, whether it's this bill or on this agency, there are some issues with the property that probably will need to be addressed. So just look at it from that angle as well.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for being brief. Chair Loon, do you have any comments before we go to the amendment, the DE1? Or Chair Erickson, yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, members. Good questions, good dialogue. I appreciate all the testifiers coming forward. I think, again, the purpose of this was to continue talking about the proposal of the bill. And the intention, and again, my motion was to lay it over. So it's not my intention that we would move the bill anywhere from here and take final action. But I do think we're going to have to try to reach some resolutions this session, at least. You know, the testimony on crosswinds was compelling. And I have spoken with St. Paul Public Schools about their proposal and their interest in operating the crosswinds school or maybe taking it over. There may be other districts interested as well, but I do think that's one issue we should, you know, try to reach resolution on. But just to recap my original opening statement, we've got three kind of distinct and important factors here: an arts high school, another school, integration operating school in crosswinds, and then the structure of a state agency and its mission and how it's being operated and if it's statutorily designed in a way that would allow it to be successful. My comment on that last point was I don't think it is, even though we clearly have very talented new board members such as Mr. Vanderkooy that have stepped forward to try to bring this back from the brink of, I think it's fair to say, disaster. So with that, I will suspend.
All right. Chair Erickson, do you have questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just appreciate, too, the testimony we've heard. But this is first and foremost two educational institutions plus one that has outreach. And we seem to have forgotten the educational emphasis. If we had someone come and say that we had deep-seated corruption within an agency or a school district or a charter school, we would be shutting it down. We cannot continue to echo this deep-seated corruption theme that we've heard today, even with the promises that have been made. So I think we think very carefully about the future, because these are our children who are at stake, whether they are in the Crosswinds arena or they are in the Purpich High School arena. Deep-seated corruption, as was said by the parent, is not acceptable.
Thank you. Representative Thiessen, you had your hand up a minute ago, and Representative Sandstead, so I don't know who wants to.
Well, I had just a question for the authors.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
And that is, do we have a fiscal note on this bill? And how much is that person at MVE going to cost?
Chair Loon.
Is it just one person, I guess, is the.
Yeah, well, that's the proposal in the legislation. We do not have a completed fiscal note. Fiscal note is in process, and so we don't have a completed fiscal note at this time.
Representative Thiessen?
So I would assume that person, I mean, typically FTE is what, about $100,000? $150,000 is what we generally run them? So, I mean, basically one of the things, I think it's just important for us to know one of the things that happens here is this generates money for this committee to spend of about $13 million. And I really hope that that's not the purpose of what we're doing here. I imagine that our target is going to be, from what I'm hearing, is going to be significantly lower than anybody on this committee would want it to be. And so I hope we're not making decisions about this school just to save money for this committee.
Representative, or Chair Loon, would you like to address that?
Yeah, I would, because I just want to assure members that, no, I mean, I think the issue has been raised as a result of the legislative auditor's report and the very serious concerns and considerations that have been raised. Yes, there is money in our budget for running PERPICH, just like we have money for the academies in Faribault, but it is our responsibility to make sure that the schools and the children being educated are being well served, and that is my overriding consideration.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is to Representative Erickson. Earlier in your testimony, you had talked about some concerns that you had with the school and why you were, you know, supporting the bill that you are. And you had mentioned drugs and alcohol, not serving all congressional districts, and just now you talked about corruption. I'm not sure on the congressional district portion of that. Do you know how many congressional districts are represented?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, there are seven.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, currently there's one that is not. And I just want to say the school itself isn't responsible for ensuring they have a person from each district. They're available to all, but that doesn't mean students are all going to apply. It may be a good fit from certain districts, and it may not be, but that's a choice on the family's part, the student's part, not perhaps the responsibility of PERPICH. On the issue of drugs and alcohol as being a concern and now corruption, you know, it's easy to talk about that because PERPICH is in the spotlight right now. But if we're going to have that conversation, let's talk about all schools, because drugs and alcohol are a reality in all schools right now. That's what we face, some to a greater degree, some to a lesser degree. Corruption, it's there too. It's in the public schools, it's in the private schools, and it's in the charter schools.
Representative Thiessen, were you still wanting to offer your DE1?
Yeah, please. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Why don't you explain what it does?
Yeah, so it's fairly straightforward as an amendment. And the first thing it does, it conveys the Crossman School by July. To emphasize, it's specifically for use as an East America Metro Area Integration School. So that would be whoever would take it over for that purpose, which was what it was before, and I think continues to try to serve that purpose. The second thing is the bill would retain the PERPICH Center, the PERPICH Center, the school, as it is, as well as the outreach, allowing it to continue with some requirements for following through, basically, on, I think, what they're doing right now, but to respond specifically to the arts education, to the legislative auditor's report. I would, if I could, make one kind of technical correction to the amendment.
All right.
And that would be on line 4.23. It asks for a report to come back by January of 2019, and I'd like the report, the amendment, to say come back by January 15, 2018. So speed that up by year, if that's okay.
Staff will incorporate that change from 2019 to 2018.
So, but it's asking, and if you look at the things on page 4 there at the bottom half, that the report would have to come back with, it really addresses many of the items highlighted in the legislative auditor's report and doing, I think, again, what they said they're going to do, which is to put together a strategic plan to develop that. And if we get that back by next January, we would then have the chance next year to see if they think their strategic plan is working. We can see if enrollment has changed. We can see if the steps that have been taken here, if the conveyance of Crosswinds has allowed more money to come back to PERPICH to allow them to do more of the outreach. It would just give them a year to do what I think that they want to do. I have to say, and it would also, require some consultation with MDE about some of the other fiscal and financial things that are outlined in the report, although most of those, I think, get taken care of with the conveyance of crosswinds. That most of that stuff related to the crosswind school because it's that was still a public school as opposed to a state agency, so there's some weirdness there, if I understand this correctly. So I have to say, though, that when this came up in the initial hearing, back in early February, I suppose, and Mr. Vanderkoy came in, my impression of his testimony and the reaction, I think, of this entire most of the committee members on both sides of the aisle was that the testimony was impressive and was confidence building. And I think his testimony today reconfirms that they've actually he and the board have actually followed through on the things, I think, at a faster timeline than they even talked about in early February on some of the things that they wanted to do to respond to these issues. If you look at the things raised in the auditor's report, concerns about top administrative leadership, that's gone, right? That the executive director is gone and they're looking for new leadership. Related to the governing board, a whole new board is in place, or at least a majority board is in place. And I think, again, doing some very impressive work that gives me a lot of confidence. The outreach, I think that has been problematic, obviously. But I also think that what we heard here about $600,000 a year going into crosswinds has had a very significant impact, and it would be good to allow another year to see if that can be turned around. And we heard from testifiers today about how important that work is. I don't know that one person situated at MDE is going to be able to make up even for what Perpich is doing right now. So what this basically would do would be to get the conveyance done, get it done by July, and would allow this new board at Perpich and the folks working there and the parents and students until next year before we make a very serious change. And I don't know what delaying a year really causes in terms of harm. I think, though, that there could be a significant upside to it. So I think the downside risk of waiting a year and seeing what they can do with the strategic plan is very low, but the upside benefit could be very significant. And for two things that I'll just close with. One, I think we all know that arts education and having arts in our schools is critically, critically important. I mean, the research is very clear, and we don't have enough of it. And having Perpich there is not going to solve that for everybody. But it's also a place where some students that really need that type of education can go that doesn't exist anywhere else in the state of Minnesota. And that was really why this, part of why this school was started to begin with. And the second thing I think we should really consider is, if we close this program down, this agency down, we're disrupting the lives of hundreds of students here in Minnesota, as well as the staff. But most importantly, those students who went to the school, have relied on the school, are anticipating the school to be there next year. I mean, these are juniors and seniors, right? And so if we shut it down right now, I think that's the thing to me that gives me the most pause about the bill that's being proposed is that disruption to those students who have found a place where they can thrive. And I think we should take that very seriously before we take this action. So that's what the amendment does, I ask for folks' support.
Representative Thiessen, before we go to the two bill authors, I know one of the reasons that we're sitting here with the crosswinds issue is that I don't think enough due diligence was done prior to moving it to Perpich. And so what due diligence has been done to make this next move? What arrangements have been made? I know that this is a kind of a fresh idea. As the Chair Loon said, other districts haven't had the opportunity to weigh in. So what is the due diligence that's been done?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the first part of your question, I don't necessarily disagree. I remember in 2013, at the end of session, people standing at my desk, in a crisis. And it was a crisis at the time. And we didn't do anything in 2013. We waited, another year. But there was a crisis with this in the, Harambe School, too. But I think you should ask Mr. Vanderkoy and Mr. Superintendent Tyne that question, because I don't know the details on that. They would be better situated to answer that.
Mr. Vandekoy, if you could come forward just briefly, if you could address that issue.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, when we just made the decision that crosswinds had to be moved, I sent the message out broadly. I got a response from St. Paul Public Schools. I also sent an email to South Washington because they were the other candidate that was interested last time and invited them to participate in the process. I spoke personally with the superintendent, encouraged him to do that, sent him a second email when we told him we were accelerating the timeline. The last word I had with him is he wanted to check with his board and then he'd get back to me. So the only two school districts that have expressed interest are St. Paul and South Washington, and I have not heard from South Washington in probably a month.
Representative Thiessen?
Thank you. And that's as good an answer as I would be able to give you as well. And I would just note, though, that the amendment does not convey the school to any particular district. It just, we, though, do have to act as a legislature to allow them to convey the school. And so the language in the bill is agnostic as to that.
All right. We're going to move on to Chair Loon and her thoughts on the amendment, and then Chair Erickson. Chair Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Thiessen. And I appreciate the spirit in which this was brought. And I think something needs to be done with crosswinds, but I am concerned about making a rash decision on transferring a school, a significant asset, to another school district without a little more thought. I think, you know, I would be more comfortable if we would explore the idea of maybe a contract to operate the school and see what happens. I mean, the enrollment's been declining there. Maybe it'll turn around. Maybe it won't. You know, so I think we need to proceed just a little more cautiously. I don't know if ample time's been there for school districts to express their interest. I know, and again, I understand the pressure that the new board is under with Purpich to try to find a solution for crosswinds, but I think, you know, that this process has moved fast where perhaps there was a feeling that the decision had already been made that the school was going to go to St. Paul before others had an opportunity to express an interest or to develop a plan. So, I think I'm not comfortable sort of with an amendment that says crosswinds is going to be conveyed per the Purpich Board's direction, and that's how I read this amendment. So I am not in favor of it at this point.
Thank you.
And one last thing, I just wanted to note, in the bill that we're considering and the concern that Representative Thiessen raised about the children currently at the high school, it was structured so that the students who are juniors, so the earlier class, would be able to finish their education and graduate from high school. So that was certainly a consideration to make sure that was accommodated in the bill as it's currently written.
Thank you. Chair Erickson, did you have anything to add to that?
Madam Chair, I just concur with that.
Okay, thank you. Let's go ahead and take a vote on the DE1. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
The motion is not adopted. Members? Representative Loon, to your motion, that House File 1825, nope, that's not it.
Yes, it is.
1825 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Yes, I would renew my motion, Madam Chair.
All right, very well. The bill is laid over, and with that, we are adjourned.